Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. That's W-Y-L. W-Y-L comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines.
Hello?
Ah, there we go. Hi, Shirley. I'm listening to myself.
Hello.
This is so weird.
There
right.
We go.
So looks like I'm going to have to do the show the crazy way. I'm going to unplug my microphone here. So I literally woke up. Oh, wait. No, I got to plug it back in. Oh, wait. No, I can't do that either. This is so crazy. All right. Here we go.
Are you having technical difficulties today?
I'm having a lot of technical difficulties today, so there we go. Well, here's the weird thing. I don't know what happened. I literally woke up about 18 minutes into my show. That's never happened. I've woken up like a few minutes before the show. I don't know if the alarms didn't go off or something went wrong, but whatever happened, I just literally was not here. And, you know, I said, what am I doing? What happened? Where's you know? So I don't know if I just slept through them or whatever happened. Whatever happened, and then I start the show live, right? So I've got 3 hours of show plugged in here, so we're going to be on for a while. The podcast folks will wonder what's going on too. But no, I just turn everything on, and then for some reason my microphone wouldn't work. You know, I got the strange note about Google Chrome accessing my microphone, so that's probably not working either. So we'll do the show on cell phone. What am I going to do?
You go with the flow. Maybe that's that daylight savings time still messing with you, huh?
No, I think I just thought of, you know, here's the weird thing. I kept thinking yesterday was Friday for some reason, because it's been a crazy week. I was working for hours and hours on a Zoom call to Australia with Jen Clark, working on the Australian Bill of Rights. And I don't know, I just, you know, maybe I just, I don't know, the alarms were set. I was awake at 3. And all of a sudden, next thing I know, it's like 6:18. It's like, oh, no, I missed my own show. It's like unpardonable sin. It's not like I have a producer who would call and say, Greg, where are you? You know, so it's one of those crazy things. So I'm just going to turn it over to you. You can probably do a better job than me this morning. So tell me what's happening, and we'll just kind of run with it from there.
That sounds like a plan. It's always good just to go with the flow. Sometimes you have to. But, yeah, so with the DC Project, the women, I'm so proud to be a part of this group of women that are out there supporting the Second Amendment, fighting to keep our Second Amendment rights. We have ladies all over. We have Missouri stuff at, well, we have, oh, well, let's see. She was speaking in front of a committee. Arizona was having rallies. Georgia was having rallies. New Jersey, they were speaking out in front of legislation. Washington, all these states, the ladies are out there making it known that we are the women that support the Second Amendment and explaining why we do. So I thought that, I just started putting all the information together, and I'm like, wow, we're out there working. I don't know where Florida is. Florida's just, I have nothing to really speak to, I guess.
Florida,
huh?
Well, how about women, you know, back when Florida was, you know, king of Second Amendment rights, back when, you know, they had the first shall issue state, and this is back in the 80s, Florida was actually doing all the right thing. Were there women gun groups then, or was it just the NRA, or who was doing it? And did Florida never really have a DC project, you know, huge contingent here? What's the history of that?
I mean, back in the 80s, I never even knew how to shoot a gun, so I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I was not even...
Yeah.
You know, in that world. But what I'm talking about is like things coming to the state legislation. You know, there's nothing out there as far as when we're trying to get that constitutional carry. I know Gun Owners of America did a rally.
Right.
Oh, was it last Monday or Tuesday? Couldn't make it, which was very disappointing. But calling for, you know, the bill to be put in front of the Governor DeSantis on his desk so he could sign it. So
he wants a gun bill, you know, he wants a constitutional carry bill. And the fact that we don't have one is just, like I said, well, as Jim Dice explains it, you know, it's a totally corrupt legislature. They've lost their way. They're taking Bloomberg money, and they're just not following through like they used to do. They don't, it's not a point of pride to lead the nation in constitutional rights. And that's a problem.
Right, and they don't understand, you know, the Constitution, the government's written, we the people, you know, they're representing we the people, and right now they're just representing their own agendas instead of listening to what the people are saying. And what this, I posted on Action Radio Group a little video, one of our delegates testifying in the Arizona State Senate Committee.
Okay.
I don't know if you got a chance to watch that. Her name is Lauren, and it had to do with their bill, House Bill 2316, which exempts concealed carry weapons holders from right now you can't go into, as a concealed carry weapons holder, you can't go into public buildings or public events. And this bill was addressing it, allowing them to do such so they can carry and protect themselves. Well, she shared a very private story of her life, and a lot of DC Project women have their own stories to back why they support the Second Amendment. And she was in domestic abusive situations, sexual assault, some really terrible things. And she's quoted, I wrote down her quote, our right to defend ourselves shouldn't change because we crossed over a threshold into a specific building or public space. You know, that's very true.
No, this is critical. I mean, I've been thinking about this for a while, and it's you know, this idea that government buildings are somehow separate from us, that government employees are separate from us, that government officers and agents can have firearms where other people can't, and we can't carry guns into so-called public buildings. Well, those should be the most accessible places to the public. You know, to be able to exercise our constitutional rights. Our rights should not end where the government begins. That whole concept was never, you know, justifiable anyway. So this is a good bill.
Yeah, and then it did, you know, that's where they're most vulnerable. You know, we know that we're not allowed to carry, no guns permitted. Those are where the criminals are going to go first, least resistance,
mm-hmm,
right?
Of course. Yep.
Well, since their Senator Contreras, his response after her testimony was, "I'm a gun owner." He's a hunter, which that was all pretty cool. And then he goes, "I'm a proud Democrat." And then he stated he doesn't need to carry a gun to all the times to feel safe. That's what his comment was. And if you feel that way, you need to stay at home and lock your doors. If you're afraid to go outside without carrying, you should just go home and lock your doors.
Was that an actual quote? Was that the continued quote? You should, if you don't feel safe,
yeah,
again, stay home and lock your doors. What an idiot!
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if you don't feel, you know, that you have a right to speak, you should just, you know, shut up too. What else should we do? You know, that's pretty scary. I mean, they were okay for a while saying, you know, the first part's okay. You know, the if you know you don't feel safe carrying a gun, then don't. But that's it. You can't tell someone else not to. You can't.
Yeah, telling her to go lock herself in her house because she only feels safe if she's carrying. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I just cannot believe he just said it.
That's
that
basic rights on feelings. That's the whole thing where, you know, they. I heard this before too. I remember listening to a judge years ago in California said that, you know, your right to, you know, defend yourself, or as you say, you know, your right to carry a gun ends when other people don't feel safe. And it's like our rights are never based on feelings because feelings are individual and feelings can, you know, individuals can either control their feelings or whatever feelings they have. It, you know, my rights are not dependent on someone else's feelings. So if they don't feel, you know, safe, you know, then don't carry a gun. But they can't tell other people how they should feel. You can't tell other people, you know, what makes them safe. You know, in the same way, and if you don't feel safe with other people walking around exercising their rights, then maybe you should, you know, think about that. So they're putting it on the wrong person. They're putting it on the person who wants to exercise their rights, you know, to change their behavior to accommodate everybody else's, you know, beliefs, especially where they don't want to apply the Constitution. Yeah, that's a Democrat. You know, I thought they were going to go somewhere different. I thought they're going to go to the deer hunting thing, like where you don't need a, you know, 100 rounds to kill a deer. Well, deer don't, you know, steal elections and take over nations and do other things either. So the deer thing just goes out the window.
He also made the statement that some people shouldn't have the right to carry a firearm. Well,
and which people would those be?
The criminals, in my book. Everybody else did, but in my book, yeah, he's absolutely right. The criminal should not be allowed to carry a firearm, but gun control isn't going to stop them from carrying their firearms. It was just, I posted it, and I'm going to try and get her on the show.
Okay.
Possibly, I'm trying to get her contact information. So here's what I'd like to do. I want her to not only, if she wants to share her story, that's fine. If not, it's up to her, but to share what it was like. Because you're putting your private life out there in front of these strangers, and you're speaking to defend your right to bear arms, and it's a lot of pressure. It's nerve-wracking. I mean, I think she's a very brave woman to do that, and all these women are brave to do that, to get out in front of the Congress and committees and share their stories and share why they're defending the Constitution and the Second Amendment. So I'd like to get on her show and just kind of relay what was it like up there. I mean, I have not testified in front of any committees, but I, you know, just have her share that and then
it would be depressing
share the
for you.
Response.
It's a skill like anything else. Like when I first started this radio show, I was terrible, you know, and I was only doing 2 hours. Of course, today's not a great example, just because of the fact that I missed the first, you know, 20 minutes. But it's practice. The more you do it, the more you broadcast on this show, the more, in fact, if you listen to your first, times on here, you're better now. You know, you're more comfortable. You're able to present information. We're very, you know, the whole thing's incredibly conversational. I think you'd be very good testifying, quite honestly, because I think if you bring to it, if you don't think of it as like, oh my God, I'm testifying, but it's like, I really want to talk to these people. I really want to educate them. I have a position. I have a story. I have something to tell them. I think this is valuable. And I think this will help all the rest of our fellow citizens, you know, especially women, you know, to be empowered to think about their self-defense and not rely on other people, which is the cause of a lot of problems anyway, of relying on somebody else to protect you, someone else to defend you, some other body, whether it's the police or whether it's a partner or a family or friends, whatever it is, you know, the self-reliance of being able to, you know, own and carry a gun is incredibly empowering. And everybody gets to this point, I think, where, you know, at first, when, like I say, when I first became a gun owner, I felt, you know, unsafe with a gun in the home. I knew I wanted to do it, but I didn't feel that great about it. And then I crossed this bridge where all of a sudden I felt I would have felt unsafe not having it. You know, it became a completely part of my life, and it was accepted, and I was practicing, and I was getting good at it. And you go from there. And if you just, you know, if you testify, just talk like that. Just tell a story. Don't think of it as like, ladies and gentlemen of the committee of whatever, you know, this is, just talk, just be yourself, and that will be much more credible. And I think you'd be really good testifying. You'd be nervous, but I really don't think you'd have any problem, quite honestly. The more public speaking you do, the better you're going to get at it.
Well, yeah.
Unless you
I
wake
agree.
Up right before your show.
Someone would share with me, because I was going to go speak, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there could be a couple hundred people there. And they said, you're just telling your story to one person, just times 200, you know, just talk to that one person. And I'm like, when they break it down like that, it's like, oh, well, okay, well, I can do that.
Yeah,
I can talk to one person.
Yeah.
So what
if
there's, so, and also, go ahead.
I was going to say, you raised a good point about public buildings, because that felt this way for a long time, that's the one place you should absolutely be able to carry a gun. How about a police station? Everybody else has got a gun. Why shouldn't you be able to have one? You know, that doesn't, that's probably, you know, but there's something about the government. There's an attitude about government, and this is why this bill is so important, because government people think of themselves as separate. Like even the police are starting to think of themselves as separate. Used to be, you know, Adam's Wealth, you know, your friendly neighborhood police officer. And now, you know, I talked to one person, well, we're not civilians. We're paramilitary. We're almost a military force. I said, no, you're not. Jeez, you take an oath to support and defend the Constitution and all the rights. And I said, you're no different than any other civilian. You just happen to be a sworn officer, you know, and you do have a badge and a gun. But quite honestly, you know, everybody else should be able to have a gun too. You're not different. And they don't understand that. So that's a problem. Have you run into that, the government supremacy attitude? Not necessarily police, but just government people in general. They don't understand why you want to have a gun in a government building. Well, why not? Because it's a constitutional right. That's why.
Sure, yeah, it's our God-given right to do that, to carry our firearms. Mm-hmm. That's how the Constitution is written. The government is supposed to be run by the people, for the people. Not just, we elected you, now you go and do whatever you want to do. But you brought up the police, and I just heard there was a video posted on firearms. Oh, I forgot who it was. They're in Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And apparently their constitutional carry is on the governor's desk. But here we go again. The state police are asking him to veto it. And it wasn't that somewhere else that Jim was talking about?
Yes, it was. Jim talked about that. Now, for those who don't know, Jim is celebrating St. Patrick's Day the proper way. He's in Ireland right now with his wife, and they're having a wonderful time. I'm going to talk to him when he comes back, because I'm curious about how they celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Ireland, because it's not the same as here. I mean, it's a completely different situation. This is something, I think it was Alabama, which just signed constitutional carry into law. And if I remember the story, the police were saying that they would lose money for law enforcement because of the loss of money for the concealed carry permits. So they didn't want people exercising their constitutional rights because they're going to lose money. That's sick. I'm sorry, folks. That is not how we base our constitutional rights. But that's what they're saying. So what's the excuse in Ohio? Job security? They think that they should be the only ones defending people, and they're gonna lose money, lose hours. What was their problem?
No, Ohio, I think just signed Constitution. No, this is Indiana.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right,
it was just a quick. It was a quick call to action. This forget who it was. Posted. It was a call to action to call the governor. He didn't say why. The governor made a comment that he'll support whatever the assistant, I think it was the assistant state police, whoever that was, whatever their decision is. And he was, the assistant state police was saying no, he's going to ask to veto it. So, I don't know why. I didn't get to that part of it. It was just a quick video I listened to this morning while I was looking for you.
Yeah, well, I was, you know, slumbering away thinking it was probably Saturday. What is it about the police, in your experience, that you – because I've seen this before. In fact, when I was briefly in U.S. Customs after 9/11, I was one of these, you know, 42-year-old wonder people who was there on 9 weeks of training because they needed people right now. I mean, this is a critical situation. And then they trained a bunch of younger agents and gave them all the cool jobs, and I ended up stuck in a booth, you know, scanning passports. And they said, well, this is where you're going to be the next 20 years. Get used to it. I said, I don't think so. So I ended up leaving. But I remember talking to officers who said that, well, we're the only ones that carry guns. We're trained for this. We're the government. You know, regular people shouldn't have guns. I said, did you ever read the Constitution? I said, did you ever read the oath you swore to, you know, when you came into this little organization of federal law enforcement? I said, you know what you just said? Everything you just said violated your oath. I said, you shouldn't even be here now. Oh, wait a minute, man, we have the guns. And there's that attitude. And I think I've talked to Jim about this too, because Jim was in law enforcement. But there is an attitude among law enforcement that they're trained. They're government. They, you know, they're better people than us. You just can't have regular people carrying guns. And I'm like, what happened to the oath you swore? Was that just to get the job and the paycheck and the pension or what? But the certain percentage of law enforcement does not go with the Constitution. Now, it's small, fortunately, but it's there. It's a pretty big contingent. And those are the folks, whether they be the political appointees, like the police chiefs, but those are the folks who would go before a state legislature and say, well, we really don't think constitutional carry is a good idea because of X. But what they're really saying is, we want to have the guns. We don't want everybody else having the guns. Do you think they think it makes their job more difficult if people are carrying guns, even though it makes it easier? You know, who do they think comes to rescue them when their backup isn't there? It's the regular citizen carrying a gun, and that's happened on several occasions. So I don't understand the attitude of law enforcement. Yeah, I don't understand that attitude, but it's their law enforcement. It's really there, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. The friends that I have a few friends in law enforcement, local, they're like, you know, carry, you should. You know, we can't be there. You need to, you know, carry and support yourself and, you know, defend yourself if need be. So they're all for it. So I don't know if it just goes up further and more of a bureaucrat type. I don't know. I really don't. But like I've said, the people I've talked to are saying, oh, yeah, we agree. We should carry. And I will share, I was a gun, a general manager at a gun range, and they'll even admit, they don't practice. A lot of them don't even practice other than for their certifications.
Yeah,
I mean, there's people in the public, I mean, at the gun club that would come out every week, but yet only few law enforcement would come out. And we gave them, you know, free membership, come out to practice. And, there was very few of them that took advantage of that, but yet the public was out there, you know, exercising their Second Amendment right, practicing, learning, keeping that skill. You know, it is a skill. So I truly do not understand the whole concept of why they do not, you know, back constitutional carry. I don't even know what the state of Florida's, I guess that'd be another Jim question. He'll probably have a better idea. What their feeling is, you know, the Florida state law enforcement.
That'd be a good question, which is interesting because Jim's organization, Florida Carry, is dedicated to open carry, constitutional carry, you know, and there's, you know, what's like 20, 30,000 members, and that's just that one organization, and there's a lot of folks who are dedicated to this. It doesn't make sense to me. Now, I got to mute myself a quick second here. What is it about, or why are we even having to advocate a constitutional right to bring states into compliance? You know, where's the federal government? Where's the Civil Rights Commission? Where's the Congress? Where's the withholding of highway funds for any state that's not constitutional carry? When you think about it, this is a civil rights issue. You know, it's an equality issue. It's an equality with government issue. So I've never understood why, you know, I mean, the federal government withheld highway funds to raise the drinking age, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, that was back, I forgot when they did that, but back when the Vietnam lowered the drinking age to 18 because people said, well, why should you be able to go die in a war and not be able to buy a drink? So the drinking age was lowered to 18. And then, of course, after the war, years later, with the highway deaths and things, you know, they raised up to 21. But the thing was that the federal government did that by withholding highway funds. And they only withheld like about 10% in some of the states. And the states immediately said, okay, you know, we'll raise the drinking age. We'll all cooperate. Why has the federal government never done that same thing with constitutional carry? Why is any state out of compliance? Why is there any state that doesn't have constitutional carry? Just based
on civil rights. I didn't even know that about the alcohol thing, the drinking age. I did not know that. Okay. Like I said, I'm learning. But that's pretty interesting. I guess maybe that's because there are taxes on alcohol, so then they're losing money.
No, there's always been that. They always got their money out. No, they raised – it was actually done through the Department of Transportation. It was the highway safety folks. And because, you know, 18-year-olds who drink, you know, are – really stupid. they're not careful, and there were teenage deaths, especially young men being 18 and crazy. I know I was one. I didn't drink and drive, but you know, I was actually taking flying lessons at the time, so that kept me from drinking because I knew I had to be responsible. So you know, that was actually a great thing for me in my youth. Not that it would have been crazy anyway, but the point was that I gave myself a responsibility which would have precluded drinking. And so that was a great thing as a teenager. But anyway, so the way it went, they raised the age. And then again, that is actually a state's rights issue too. The federal government had no business doing that. If the state wants to have drinking age at 18, then that's their business. But they did, and they coerced the states they actually extorted the states through the withholding of highway funds. And I thought, well, why are you doing that and not doing it for Second Amendment rights? But the thing is, they don't care. You know, in the same way that the politicians say, well, you don't need 100 rounds to kill a deer. I said, of course not. Yeah, but deer aren't going to take away my rights. So that's a stupid argument.
And that's where you just said it right there. They're not going to do that because they're, I think it's fear. It's fear-based because they know the Constitution, the government was formed way back when to serve the people. The people were to be the government. They were supposed to be, you know, making the decisions through legislators like the Congress and Senate. But now they're not doing that. So now they're afraid that if, you know, people wake up and go, well, okay, we're not doing what the people are asking us to do, that, you know, we have a right to defend ourselves, to defend the government, and to get the government what we want. So I think it goes back to fear. A lot of gun control, from what I've been reading about on these different books, is all about fear, and it doesn't affect them. It doesn't, if they're afraid of the guns, they don't have the guns, so these laws don't affect them. But they don't understand they do affect them because now you can't defend yourself. You're depending on someone else to defend your right to live if someone's attacking you. So I think it all goes back to, you know, fear and agendas. You know, it's easy to control people if they don't know what their rights are, right? If they don't know what they're allowed to do.
I think it may be some fear, but I really think you hit the nail on the head with control. And I have another theory, too, is that it's easier if nobody has guns. It's easier if nobody's on the highways. You know, it's easier if you don't have freedom. I really believe these people think that they're the gods, they're in charge, they make the rules. You know, if people would just do what they say and live in a government cubicle and, you know, take public transportation and work in a government job or be dependent on government welfare, if you just stop talking, stop exercising your rights, just make our lives easier, they'd be a lot happier. And they sort of had this image of this utopian world where they're in charge and people all drive electric cars, and nobody protests, and there's, you know, freedom is, yeah, what's there in the ideal, but nobody's really exercising it. I think they'd honestly be happier. And I don't know how much is fear, how much is control, or how much is just, they just think their lives, you know, government would be easier if people would just stop being people.
Yeah, and stop objecting to what they want to accomplish. I think you're absolutely right. And this goes back to, like I said, you know, in the last 2 years, I'm learning a lot about what goes on in government, but I always thought, you know, what's my little one phone call to my representative or my delegate? What's that going to do? Does it really make a difference? And you know what? I have learned, and I've been listening to like Kat Cameron. She said your call makes a difference. When you light up those phone lines, the representatives that are really there to vote for the people and the needs and wants of the people, they do listen. And we also had DC Project lobbyist Sarah Moe. She's been helping us, and she said, your calls do make a difference. So that mentality of what difference can one phone call or one person make, it does make a difference. And now I believe it. Before it's like, really? But, yeah, if they're listening, if they are true representatives, not only of the people, but of the Constitution, they will listen to what people are saying. And I thought that was, that's why that mentality of, well, what can I do? That we've got to change that, because it does make a difference from what I hear and what I've seen.
Yeah, just always remember, when people say I'm only one person, Martin Luther King was only one person. Mother Teresa was only one person. So you look at Thomas Jefferson was one person. Of course, he had a lot of friends with, the fellow founders. But everybody's only one person. And so given that everybody is only one person, then it's amazing what one person can do, especially when one person works with other people, and especially when those people agree and they decide to get some stuff done. You look at any of the pro-Second Amendment organizations, they were started by one person. So one person has a huge impact. But if you think about the government model of control, of apathy, of we don't be bothered with the people, in whose interest is it that nobody calls? It's in their interest. So they're going to perpetuate the myth that, it doesn't really have an effect. I'm sure that comes from government somehow, some way, that, and the bad government people are, they're going to sort of perpetuate this, that, don't call, it's not going to have any effect. The good people will actually encourage you to call. And so that's the thing. It's like, please, let me hear from my constituents. And it's true, they don't hear from as many. You know who they hear from? They hear from the lobbyists. They hear from, and these are the lobbyists are probably telling people too that your vote doesn't count. They hear from the donors. They hear from the lobbyists. They hear from the special interests. How do you think that $1.5 trillion pork bill passed in the dead of night? Was that citizens saying, oh, please, please, please spend another $1.5 trillion? Do you think people were calling up Congress to do that? No. It was all the people that were going to get that money. Those are the people who were calling and writing and taking them to dinner and offering them perks and having trips and go on fact-finding missions and all the things that lobbyists do. The modern equivalent of Epstein's Island, whatever the current, thing is. Maybe it's like, well, let's get you to Ukraine. We'll show you around a little bit. Who knows what's going on? But those are the people who are calling, and they call all the time. And that's the problem. Did you ever hear, I think it was Matt Gaetz, Mike Tarnum, so we're all going to go meet him. A bunch of us are going to hop down here from Action Radio, those of us in the Milton, Pensacola area. His office is in Fort Walton Beach. I think Mike Huckabee lives somewhere down there, too, or at least has a summer house. I wonder if he's going to be there. That'd be really interesting, too. Anyway, we're all going to hop down, and he encourages people to come see him. But Gaetz talked about, your first day in Congress, and it's not run by Congress. It's run by the lobbyists. And the lobbyists tell people how things work, and the lobbyists take them around and show them around Congress. And they say, and here are the bills, and we have all these wonderful things for you. And then they get the talk. They get the talk where if you play ball, you can have a nice career here. You can have your committee chairs. You can have your campaign funds. You can get your perks. And all we ask is that you go along and just, be loyal to the party. In other words, give up your soul, give up your thinking, give up everything that you came here to do, and just, follow the party line. And you look at the Democrats, they all march in lockstep. They all do that. That's the same talk, I think, that Congress got January 6th when the Trump supporters were above ground at what we call the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In, and the real insurrection was going on below, where they got the talk that if you want to keep, your job, you're going to vote in Brandon. And so there's a lot of behind-the-scenes things that happens in Congress. So they will march together. They will march in lockstep, and they won't be independent. And we need to change that by doing just what you're saying. Call, write, visit. That's what the truckers are doing. And the truckers are being blocked out by the D.C. police. And they're having their exits, turned off. And, they don't want freedom. They want to put themselves behind walls. They want to be behind the military. They want to be away from the people. And I'm sorry, folks. Your donors are not, are not your folks. We are. And that's a huge attitude thing that has to change. But that's how Congress works.
And that's exactly what Jim was saying about, why the constitutional carry isn't coming up to the committee. Because the people that are making the big donations to the representatives, the Republicans, don't want it. So they're not going to do it because they're afraid to lose their money. But you got to think about it. if we have 2.8 million concealed carry weapons license holder, let's say, or 2.5, I can't remember, I always mix those two up. But if they each gave a dollar, you know, these are the people that are out there that you are to represent. If they each gave a dollar, look at the funds that you would have. Not just one person is not the person that you should be voting based on that donation. And I think people are getting they're seeing that and they're getting a little tired of it. Here locally, I see a lot of grassroots people running for commissioner, running for, you know, school board. They're tired of it. And they're, these are regular people that had no ambitions to be in a government of any type, just like I had years ago, no ambitions to think that I need to defend my Second Amendment or I'd even need to carry or want to carry. Need and want for me are close to the same thing. I need it, I want it, and it's my right. It's my God-given right.
Well, that's a really interesting.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish your thought, because this is really critical, I think.
Okay. It went.
Sorry to interrupt you then. No. But you think about that. Think about needs and wants. In other words, well, why do you need to carry a gun? Well, that's not your business. You know, I may just want to carry a gun. You know, I wanted to come to Florida to experience carrying a gun as a free man. I mean, I carried one in law enforcement. That wasn't such a big deal for me because, you know, it was kind of strange, though, that as a customs inspector, you know, I could carry 24 hours a day anywhere in the country. You know, I could put my guns on airplanes, you know, and ship them anywhere. I mean, I could do anything I wanted to do. And that was kind of weird to me and then when I wasn't a government employee, and then it got taken away again. So, well, that was kind of strange. You know, so part of living in Florida, the attraction was I wanted to be a non-government person carrying a firearm just because I wanted to, just because it's a symbol of my freedom. I don't need to give a reason. I don't have to need to carry a gun. The mere fact that I want to, that I want to experience that, that's what the Constitution's all about. It's like people that want to exercise free speech just because it's kind of cool. I want to see what this is like. I want to do some public speaking. You know, let me exercise my right. And so this idea of need and want, you know, people think that they have to need to carry a gun. You don't. It's very, and this is something you may want to focus on DC Project. You know, you may just want to carry a gun. You may just want to experience carrying a gun. It is the symbol of your freedom. It is the strongest symbol of freedom I think we have. You can't be free unless you can carry a gun. Because if you don't have the means, in fact, I wrote something for state of Florida years and years ago. It's a ballot initiative, you know, on concealed carry permits. You know, and you can. And I remember the statement: you cannot be free, you know, if you don't have the implements of your freedom. And the greatest implement of your freedom is the firearm. Let me see if I can drag it. Do you have a few minutes extra, or do you have to go? How's your schedule today, Shirley?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I hit the mute button. I was right, wrong button.
Oh,
no, I have a few minutes.
This is the day for mistakes.
You know what it is? Those stinking little leprechauns. They messed with your alarm, and they're just messing things up.
Is this Leprechaun Day? Is that what's going on?
That was yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
That was yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess the leprechauns don't want to be just one day a year. They want to be 2 days a year.
That's right.
The leprechauns are messing with me. Oh, sure, and I could see people with an Irish accent the rest of the show. How would that be, darling? It'd be grand. Oh, we could meet for a wee dram of Irish whiskey. Wouldn't it be wonderful? So that's the curse. We're going to speak in Irish accents the rest of the day. Top of the morning to you, Shirley. How you doing? let me read something I wrote. Jim's missing and Derek's missing, and the whole show is kind of crazy anyway. I've got something for you that I wrote years ago, and I'll post this on the Action Radio Gun page. It was the Self-Preservation Act. This is one of my earliest writings on Bill. So this is probably 20 years old now. I wrote this is the actual ballot proposal that I wrote. Self-preservation being a natural right of free men and women, the individual right to purchase, own, and carry firearms and ammunition shall not be infringed, controlled, regulated, separately taxed, nor restricted or denied by firearm characteristic, registration, certificate, license, or permit. It's sort of an updated version of the Second Amendment. And then I wrote this, an argument for the Self-Preservation Initiative. Throughout human history, the one eternal struggle has been between the individual citizen who strives for freedom against the government power which seeks to rule by absolute control. Every nation and state can be judged by analyzing the point of balance between the latitude of individual freedom and the limit of collective government power. The only legitimate function of government is to safeguard life, liberty, family, and property. Whenever any government entity seeks powers beyond its legitimate function, the citizenry is required to restrain that government by removing those powers and the means to exercise those powers which that government entity has illegally usurped. When you were born, you came into the world with a gift. That gift is a collection of certain unalienable rights. Taken together, they define what it is to be free. These are natural rights. The right which makes all other rights possible is the right of self-preservation. From this naturally extends the preservation of liberty, family, and property. Natural rights predate and transcend all government powers. This is why governments cannot legitimately deny or control natural rights. The only way these rights may be denied or controlled is through the use of brute force. Free citizens are required to resist the illegal use of brute force. Therefore, essential to the right of self-preservation is the right to the instruments of self-preservation. The most effective instrument of self-preservation is the firearm. It is the means by which the collective government exercises brute force. It is a means by which criminals inflict terror. You cannot consider yourself free if you do not control the instruments of your freedom. You are not free if your fear of retribution from the government for owning, carrying, or using firearms for self-preservation is greater than your fear of any criminal or terrorist force that may be used against you or your family. Whenever any government entity, through the exercise of illegally usurped powers, seeks to withhold or restrict the individual right to purchase, own, and carry firearms and ammunition for self-preservation, then that government has become destructive of liberty and must itself be strictly controlled. This amendment to the California Constitution creates no new law or right. It does specifically enumerate and declare the natural right of self-preservation that you already have. Since the government of California and countless inferior entities within the state have illegally usurped control of your right to purchase, own, and carry firearms and ammunition, this amendment to the California Constitution is now required. And I wrote that years ago.
But wow, that was for California. That was very good. That was very good. That was for California. Did you actually present that or something, or was that a speaking engagement?
Oh yeah, no, I submitted that. I tried to get that into articles. I sent it. Jeff Metcalf was the talk show host at the time, and I presented it to him. He loved it, and so we were trying to get a bill on the ballot. It's my earliest political efforts with Second Amendment rights to try and bring about, you know, a change in the California Constitution. To basically, because the California Constitution doesn't have a Second Amendment. So I tried to write.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
They don't have the Second Amendment. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. You were saying?
That was awesome. What you just wrote and what you just read, that sums it up very well. And that actually answered the question as to why government wants to control our firearms, our Second Amendment. You actually answered it right in that whole paragraph that you just read. And I'm like, there it is. There's our answer. You know, control.
Yeah.
It's all about control, and they're afraid that, you know, they'll lose control. So yeah, well done.
Well, thank you. You know, it's interesting. They actually they believe in the brute force of guns because that's what they use. They actually use our own implements of freedom against us, which is kind of
Well, have you noticed now? Now, I just noticed, let me just put it that way, in Alabama, now that they passed constitutional carry, now they're trying to throw in, like, bills for red flag. So they're still trying to control it, even though they've just given you constitutional carry. Now they're going to add bills that will control your constitutional carry, if that makes sense.
Well, no, actually, it makes perfect sense. They've lost the war, and now they're trying to win another battle. You know, they've
exactly.
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of posting this, and I'll put it on the gun group for you too, so that you can have it. And so just do a quick thing here. I suppose I should do it later, like when I'm, you know, playing something else. But I think of it now. I want to do it now.
Well, yeah, if you're like right me, now. It's like later. What was I was supposed to do something. I just can't remember what it was, but I was going to do something. But that brings up a good question while I've got you here.
Yes.
The Action Radio Gun Group and then Action Radio. So if I wanted to post something, like I post the testimony of Lauren, do I post, would you want me to post it to both of those or just to which one would you like me to post stuff?
Well, you can post stuff in the gun group anytime you want. And are you talking about the Action Radio group, the news group?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can post
that's
both.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's really up to you. They're both different. Well, I want to develop both. The gun group is more limited, obviously, because it's a gun group. And quite honestly, I would love to have a social media person. We have 18 groups, specific groups at Action Radio. I've got everything from homeschool to family law to a special investigations page. We've got just a variety of different issues. You know, we had the vaccine project, which is private because everybody was trying to cancel me off Facebook with it. There's a lot of different things. In fact, I think I tagged you in the post, so maybe on your Facebook page too. But there you go. You can share that with DC. You can use those arguments. You can take it anywhere you want. Feel free.
Why I post on the Action group is because, all right, the Action Gun group, I know they're already, we're all on the same page.
Right.
But,
uh-huh.
There's other people that might be on the Action group. They're, like, on the fence on the Second Amendment. Do I want to, where you feel, what you think you should do, or how you, and so that's why I kind of thought, well, I'm going to post there, trying to get more people to see the light, I guess you could put it.
Yep. If people shared the show, you're talking about what can one person do. If the people listening would share it with, Metcalf used to say this, if people listening would share with 10 people and those people would share with 10 people and those people would share with 10 people, pretty soon, it wouldn't take long before we'd have a million listeners, and that's where we need this show to go. So this show is going to have some pretty major impact as we grow. I'll tell you, I'll give you a little preview of upcoming attractions. This Bill of Rights that I'm working on with Australia is going to be probably national and international news too. They have an election in May, and we're working feverishly on it. I'm not going to give the details or share what the actual bill is because I want to make sure that, Jen Clark, who I'm working with, has a chance to talk to, we're getting lawyers and political figures and all kinds of different people and just the civil rights advocates. And it's a fascinating process that's going on. Nobody really knows about it yet, except us, because we're not going public. But when it does go public, it's going to be very interesting. And Action Radio is going to be a much larger force in the world because of our work in Australia than it is right now. And that might be something, countries like Australia and England and Canada, who have lost their gun rights in particular, these are going to be places that I think like DC Project can go, branch out internationally. And so people worldwide are having their rights violated in ways that we never imagined. And it started with the guns. And I remember, when I talked to Jen about this a while back, and she says, we never saw this coming with COVID. We're like, we did. As soon as they took your guns away, we saw this coming. And so that's, but it's amazing how fast the folks, co-opted it here. But yeah, the impact of this show and the work that you're doing here and the DC Project and other things like that, it's going to be, people are screaming, and like you said earlier, they're running for office. People who never thought they would run for office are running for office. There is going to be such a change, I think, in our government this November. And it's not going to be necessarily at the congressional level because there's still a bunch of deep state, insurrectionists for Brandon. But at the local and the state levels, there are going to be monumental changes. And hopefully the state will finally take the election correction. Yeah, go ahead. What do you think?
Right. And when you get back to the local and state, and it's just going to keep building, and then we're going to get into the federal. It mm-hmm. snowballs. And that's why one person, I'm just going to kind of like close with this. Because I'm believing it myself. One person can make a difference. Just like you said, it can snowball. You share something. You talk about something. You voice your opinion, and then someone else comes in, and they voice their opinion, and then pretty soon you have a group. So one voice does make a difference, and if your Congress and your Senate are actually there representing the people, they will listen to those phone calls, those emails that are sent out. And like I said, the ladies of DC Project are out there just working it, and I'm so proud to be a part of that organization. But I'm going to need to leave you.
Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate the extra time, especially, salvaging my rather bad start to this morning's show. So it was really great to have you.
To be honest with you, I'm like, okay, I don't see the link, because sometimes when I'm getting ready, I like to listen to see what you're talking about. And I went, huh, that's interesting. And then I went, and I called in, and there was dead air, and I went, okay, did something happen? Is he there? Did he shut down? Where? So I'll get a little concerned.
Yeah, no,
but then,
I'm going to start setting my phone alarm, I'm going to set my phone alarm, which is even louder. I have two alarms. I think it went off. I may have just literally slept through it just because, you know, for some reason I kept thinking yesterday was Friday. And so maybe mentally I just, you know, I know I had a show to do today, but it just, for some reason, missed it. So the mind-body connection wasn't there. And,
exactly. If you think it's Friday and your body's going, okay, tomorrow's Saturday, and then you said you were up to the wee hours working on the bill for Australia. So I'm sure it's just a combination of things, but you've got things rolling. This will probably be one of the better shows ever because you're just like rolling with it.
Let's just do it. Yeah. Well, actually, no, I had a show once before where I woke up 12 minutes before the show. And I was just panicking, and I said, I didn't really have anything prepared. See, now I'm smarter. So now I prepare, you know, stuff for like 2 or 3 days ahead of time. I've got enough material, so I don't mind doing it. But in those days, I was still in the morning prepping for that show. That was much more of a panic situation. So now I don't care as much. But yeah, that's just experience. It's like public speaking. The more you do, the better you get. But I'm really proud of you and what you're doing with DC Project. I'm really happy with this group. It seems wonderful. I mean, anybody from DC Project is welcome on the show. The only thing I would do is see if I can think about this educate, not legislate, considering we're in the citizen legislation business here. The only thing I might
say. Yeah, you kind of take that out of context sometimes. But we get it. We get what you're saying. Yes, we're not against all bills. We're not saying that at all. But so I am going to – this is Shirley Wattrell with DC Project, Florida State Director, and on Action Radio, DC Project, Women and Gun Rights. And I would like to wish everybody a wonderful weekend. And if you'd like to get any information on DC Project or join us in our fight to preserve our Second Amendment, you can go to dcproject.info and sign up, make donations, just be a part of the organization that's making a difference.
I tell you,
and
like
that's
I said,
it
you're
for
really,
me on Action
really
Radio.
No, that's perfect. You know, so yeah, that's really appreciate it. Shirley, have a wonderful week. And if you have questions or comments or things for me, you know, during the week, feel free. I post the Self-Preservation Act on the Action Radio Gun Group, and I tag you, so it's probably on your page too. But take that wherever you want, and I hope it proves useful to you. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week, where hopefully I'll start the show on time.
Too.
Maybe.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, goodbye now. So for those who are joining us live and don't know exactly what happened, I'm calling in on my cell phone. My microphone didn't connect properly. I totally either blew through my alarms or I'm not sure what happened, but I woke up about 6:18, about 18 minutes after the show was supposed to start. And because of that, everything's kind of wacky right now. So I've got a bunch of stuff to do. I think there's something new happening, and One American News has been reporting it. They had a big special last night. Fox News is starting to cover this. And although I'm not a news reporting service because there's so many, you know, much bigger organizations with you know, paid full-time reporters and that can look at it and do this as their full-time job, you know, I like to sort of delve into the news and kind of analyze what's going on. And there was a story about last week talking about how the Ukraine war really is a Biden cover-up of all the things that the Democrats have been doing there, that the Ukraine is so corrupt, so full of basically Clinton Foundation, Democrat money laundering, that to be there is either a payoff or some kind of thing, or they've got Brandon, you know, by the blackmail, got him by the horns of the blackmail beast. And so we don't know what exactly is going on, but something's happening there. And yes, Russia went in and invaded. Yes, people are being killed. Yes, it's a horrible, stupid tragedy. There's no reason for it. But even when there's no reason, we want to see if we can find a reason. I think there are definitely some reasons. And although we can't stop, tragedies like what Russia's doing necessarily, we can certainly stop the conditions that make it easier for them to do it. And one of those would be to find out what's really going on in Ukraine and what might be going on in other nations. You know, that's the reason I played the Benghazi stand-down orders a while back. We did that earlier this week, was because there are things that our government is doing that they shouldn't be doing. There are things that the State Department is doing in Ukraine that they shouldn't be doing. You know, you have to wonder, does our government work for us or for them? And my answer is the government works for them. So let me play something from Santa Rosa Volunteers. I have the 10th Amendment, the Federalist Number 10 in the works. I've been reading it. It's complex. It's got some good parts to it, but it's got a lot of garbage in it. And I'm trying to get around the garbage and put together a nice presentation for you for next week on Federalist Number 10. And then, of course, we'll take Anti-Federalist Number 10. And the Anti-Federalist Papers is so much more fun. So Derek's out. Jim's out. The next person we're going to hear from at the top of the hour is Donnie Chapman, who has a guest. We have another competitive shooter on, so you want to definitely stick around for that. And again, if you're listening to the podcast, you know, you don't care. But for those of you who are listening live, I apologize. I screwed up, and I was late this morning getting the show started. And hopefully, like I say, I'll start using my phone or maybe getting to sleep earlier. Something I've got to change because that should never, ever happen. And let me play you Santa Rosa Volunteers' piece on church and state. I'll be back in a little bit.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there, or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state. But they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptist that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda, or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state, as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level,
but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptist wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptist, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptist from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Okay, I'm back with the Mogan Report. I don't know what the call today. Like I say, I missed the beginning part of it. And we're just kind of, and I'm on my cell phone, my microphone didn't connect correctly. Everything's going wrong today, but at least the show is here. Shirley called in on time. We had a great chat. She was able to stay a little bit extra. And so we're kind of getting organized here. So, I there's a lot of news. Friday's catch-up day anyway. And so it's a good time to get all the stuff, all the different stories, through the week that doesn't necessarily have a particular theme today, but there's a lot going on. I just want to remind folks too that our wandering congressman, as Northwest Florida Daily calls him, is coming home. And so Matt Gaetz has a new campaign headquarters. He actually has a rival, it looks like. In fact, I think it's Brian Jones is the name of the person that's running against him. No, not the singer from AC/DC. That's a different person. But anyway, there's someone running against Gaetz. So, of course, I want him on the show, too. So this is going to be interesting. This is going to be a really fun, political season that looks like Gaetz is being challenged, which means he's going to come back to the district more, hopefully get rid of the hair gel, and just be like he used to be. You know, that interview I played yesterday, that classic, Matt Gaetz interview from July of 2018, right before the new owners of WBY fired me. Anyway, point being that at that point, Matt Gaetz was engaging us with insights and just fabulous, news things. And it was, we were really working together well, and I was able to give him bills that he would take to Washington. And we had just this fabulous working relationship. And I really want to get that back again. At least I'm hoping to. We'll find out. I'll find out Saturday when Lisa gets to talk to him as he hands me a burger, off the grill. And so that's going to be a very interesting time. We got some folks going down from Action Radio. We have some of the people in the area here. I'll probably talk more about that Monday when we see who can actually make it. But we do have the local folks. Josie's in the local area here. Chancey's here. Cindy Cagle, Medical Freedom, she's around here. And a few other folks who are helping us with the show are in this area here. And we're all going to hop down, and then, go to the Gaetz Barbecue and to have a chat. And I will be bearing bills, the two bills in particular, the bill that puts full product liability on the vaccine manufacturers and the bill that ends big tech censorship. And I'm really curious to see if he will submit those to Congress, you know, because they would change everything. You know, if we can get rid of big tech censorship, first thing that'll happen is Action Radio is going to grow by leaps and bounds because we're so heavily censored here, it's ridiculous. You know, and ever since I came out and said that, you know, the COVID government program is a complete and total hoax. The virus is real, but the government plan, the CDC plan, the NIH plan, the plan by Dr. Fauci is a complete and total hoax. This is a disease that's 99.99%, you know, not going to bug you. I mean, literally, you know, it's moderate symptoms are worse, you know, and so for most people it wasn't a problem. But anyway, we talked about that. As soon as I talked about that, of course, we got completely censored. So let's talk about another thing that might get completely censored now that I'm on a roll here. And this is what's going on in Ukraine and what we're not being told. But there are people starting to come up with this. Real Clear Investigations had a piece. Paul Sperry, Real Clear Investigations, March 10th. And so that's last week. It says Ukraine worked with Democrats against Trump in election 2016 to stop Putin. That bet backfired badly. And so what we're finding out is that Ukraine is really the Democrats, you know, money laundering corruption playground. And how much is that impacting, you know, the policy of Brandon regarding, you know, weapons and things like that? And how much was, you know, trying to get Ukraine in NATO? And how much was trying to put all these countries right around Russia, you know, against Russia? You know, we wouldn't like it if China, you know, and Russia were trying to put Chinese and Russian weapons on the Canadian and Mexican border of the United States. We wouldn't be too thrilled with that. Well, what's the difference between NATO putting weapons on the Russian border? None. I understand why they're upset. That doesn't justify what they're doing, but it does explain what they're doing in many ways. And there's a big difference between justifying and explaining. Anyway, so Paul Sperry says on March 10th in Real Clear Investigations, 6 years ago, before Russia's full-scale invasion of their country, the Ukrainians bet that a Hillary Clinton presidency would offer better protection from Russian President Vladimir Putin, even though he had invaded Crimea, during the Obama-Biden administration, whose Russian policies Clinton vowed to continue. You see, I don't understand this. I have always felt that that Russia wanted Hillary Clinton, that most, like Saudi Arabia, you know, maybe not Saudi Arabia, that's probably a bad example, but there are a lot of countries, China absolutely wanted Hillary Clinton, but the terrorist countries, the communist countries, dictatorship companies absolutely wanted Hillary Clinton because, you know, they knew she was going to govern us like a dictatorship and that she would completely be subservient to her globalist masters and continue the decline of the United States. So, of course, they wanted Hillary Clinton. So this idea that that Putin wanted Trump or that Xi Jinping wanted Trump is and always was completely absurd. It was a completely absurd proposition because it never made any sense. Who would you want, the person that's going to put America first or the person that's going to want to put globalists first? Well, obviously, you want the globalists, all right? So if you're China and Russia, you want Hillary Clinton, obviously. I mean, how much were they contributing to Hillary Clinton? How much stuff do you think you could take out of the United States if you're China under Hillary Clinton as opposed to under Trump? You know, what's going to happen with North Korea under Trump versus under Hillary Clinton? She might be stupid enough to start a war with North Korea, given her propensity to try and start wars, you know, in other places, and her stupidity in terms of Benghazi and her handling of Gaddafi and increasing ISIS to try and go after Syria and all the other stupid things that she did. She's a terrible leader. I mean, she's failed at everything. There's not one Hillary Clinton success you can point to, unless you consider Uranium One, getting rid of 20% of our uranium, you know, a Hillary Clinton success. But basically, she's a disaster. She's a disaster on so many levels. You know, to have her, it's going to be funny to watch her run again. I'd love to see a Trump-Clinton rematch. That would be funny. That would be hysterical. Anyway, so let me get back to the article. It says, working with both the Obama administration and the Clinton campaign, Ukrainian government officials intervened in the 2016 race to help Clinton and hurt Donald Trump in a sweeping and systematic foreign influence operation that's been largely ignored by the press. Well, of course it's been ignored by the press. They want to do it again. Why do you think election fraud's been ignored by the press? They want to do it again, you know. So this is why it's so critical to clean up 2020 before 2022 and 2024. I don't know if it's going to happen for 2022. I hope it happens for 2024 to have Brandon declared a criminal, a coup leader, you know, someone who usurped the White House illegally. I mean, we still need to have that proven, and we're never going to get our country back. and that's the most fundamental thing to have happen, is that the insurrection, the coup that took over our country with the cooperation of deep state Democrats and Republicans is the most important thing to change, is the most important thing to accomplish, is to correct the 2020 election, put the proper person, Donald Trump, in the White House where he should have been, or at least declare that he should have won based on the amount of electors that were for Trump from the states, the battleground states, the seven states, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, and New Mexico, where the fraud took place that put Brandon in there. You know, so that needs to happen. Anyway, this is just another phase of it. A whole other thing here. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I discovered one of the problems with doing my phone is that when I get calls, you know, it tends to be a problem. So let's hope I'm still broadcasting here. Yeah, it looks like I'm still on. All right, so let's get back to this article here. It says that let me start the sentence again. Anyway, so it was an effort to hurt Donald Trump in a sweeping and systematic foreign influence operation that's been largely ignored by the press. The improper, if not illegal, operation was run chiefly out of the Ukrainian embassy in Washington, where officials work hand in glove with a Ukrainian-American activist and Clinton campaign operative to attack the Trump campaign. The Obama White House was also deeply involved in an effort to groom their own favored leader in Ukraine and then work with his government to dig up dirt on and even investigate their political rival. Now, bear in mind, too, this is the same time that Trump was being spied on. Okay, so the 2016 campaign, somewhere, I'm guessing, you know, either right before or right after the nomination. So this would have been August of 2016. You know, the spy operation was really cranked up. Apparently, the operation with Ukraine was cranked up, too. So this is all part of the same problem, the same scandal, the same corruption, the deeply, you know, treasonous Democrat Party. There, okay, as Mark Levin would say, there, I said it, deeply treasonous Democrat Party. Come there. All right, next paragraph. Ukrainian and Democratic operatives also huddled with American journalists to spread damaging information on Trump and his advisors, including allegations of illicit Russian-tied payments that, though later proved false, forced the resignation of his campaign manager, Paul Manafort. The embassy actually weighed a plan to get Congress to investigate Manafort and Trump and stage hearings in the run-up to the election. Yeah, well, that's what the January 6th committee is. It's a committee to stop Trump from running again. That's all it is. Paul Manafort, this, I think they missed the boat on Paul Manafort. Paul Manafort, I remember when Michael Reagan was a lot bigger with his talk show. And one of the things he talked about with Paul Manafort, and there's one other guy, that are the chief Republican campaign strategists. And they're losers. They're total losers. I mean, Michael Reagan was very clear, very unequivocal, because he knows campaigns. You know, his father, Ronald Reagan, you know, was president. So Michael Reagan knows all about political campaigns. And what he said about Paul Manafort, and I've forgotten who the other person was that they're so corrupt. They're the people that had Mitt Romney lose to Obama. They're the people that had John McCain lose to Obama. They're the people that engineered losing campaigns for Republicans everywhere they went, and yet they were the go-to people to go to. And that never made any sense to me. Paul Manafort is a terrible campaign person. As soon as he got in the Trump campaign, you know, my heart sank. I said, oh, no, you can't have this guy. Fortunately, he was out a few months later. But the damage that was done, you'll notice the only time Trump dipped in the polls, the only time Trump had problems was when Paul Manafort was running the campaign. Okay, that's by design. Paul Manafort represents the deep state. Paul Manafort probably represents the Democrats in the Republican Party. Paul Manafort should have nothing to do with Republican politics, and Republicans should have nothing to do with Paul Manafort. All right, back to the article. As it worked behind the scenes to undermine Trump, Ukraine also tried to kneecap him publicly. Ukraine's ambassador took the extraordinary step of attacking Trump in an op-ed article published in The Hill, an influential U.S. Capitol Hill newspaper, which I don't read because a bunch of, you know, crony hacks. Anyway, that was my comment, not the article. It says, while other top Ukrainian officials slammed the GOP candidate on social media. And the article's right here in this article. Ukraine's ambassador, Trump's comments send wrong message to world, okay? And so there you go. So there's the article. They even post the Hill investigation in this Real Clear Investigations piece, which you can look up by Paul Sperry, Real Clear Investigations, March 10th, 2022. Big picture of Biden, you know, warmly embracing, you know, the corrupt Ukrainian president. He's big on hugs. You notice that? Biden's big on hugs, especially young girls. That's another story. All right. Back to the article. At first glance, it was a bad set as Trump upset Clinton, but by the end of his first year in office, Trump had supplied Ukrainians what the Obama administration refused to give them, tank-busting Javelin missiles and other lethal weapons to defend themselves against Russian incursions. Putin never invaded on Trump's watch. Instead, he launched an all-out invasion during another Democrat administration, one now led by who I call insurrectionist Brandon, Barack Obama's former vice president, whose Secretary of State last year alarmed Putin by testifying, "We support Ukraine's membership in NATO." Dumb thing to say. Biden boasted he'd go toe-to-toe with Putin. Yeah, right. But that didn't happen as the autocrat amassed tanks along Ukraine's border to in response to the NATO overtures. That's really what this is all about. Okay, what really is going on in Ukraine is that Putin's sending a message. NATO has no business in countries that border Russia. That's, I really think, what this is all about. You know, the way that the attacks are going, and I think what's happening, I think he's lost control of his field commanders, because you got field commanders, you know, killing citizens. I don't know if that, you know, how much that's a part of Putin's plan and how much that's a part of rogue commanders, you know, in wartime going a little crazy. And there's no excuse for that, again. But the Ukrainians apparently are defending themselves, you know, fairly well. I hear on one hand, then I heard Colonel Doug McGregor on with Tucker Carlson last night saying that things are going very badly for Ukraine. So I have no idea what the true story is. I really don't know. And, you know, like I say, I don't have a stack of reporters I can send to Ukraine and tell you. So I try and get the best evidence I can. But what we can talk about is the corruption in the Democrat Party and why they need to be investigated under RICO statutes to find out what the hell they're doing in Ukraine and why this one country seems to be the magnet for all of this money and corruption and attention and impeachment, you know, evidence. And I don't think it's any surprise that Ukraine is the center of Trump impeachments simply because the Democrats, you know, are there. They have a corrupt situation there. They've basically either bought and paid for, you know, Ukrainian government, or they're paying for Ukrainian government to go work against Trump. I mean, this is really fascinating. You know, the extent of criminality of Washington, and that includes the Republicans. You know, the deep state. You know, Brandon wouldn't be there without Republicans. Keep that in mind. Brandon would not be sitting in the White House illegally if not for Republicans, and that's something you always have to keep in mind. Okay, so let's get back to the article. At first glance, it was a bad bet as Trump upset Clinton, but by the end of his first year in office, yeah, I think I already read that. Okay, there we go. I'm sorry. I got to skip down here a second. Back to the article. The Ukrainian mischief is part of Special Counsel John Durham's broader inquiry. Yeah, see, I've always wondered about John Durham. I didn't think he was doing any kind of a good job because he's taking 6 years to do what he should have done in 6 months. That's what my problem with John Durham. Anyway, John Durham's inquiry, now a full-blown criminal investigation with a grand jury indictment into efforts to falsely target Trump as a Kremlin conspirator in 2016 and beyond. So here we go. So the article continues. Sources say Durham has interviewed several Ukrainians, but it's not likely the public will find out exactly what he's learned about the extent of Ukraine's meddling in the election until he releases his final report, which sources say could be several months away. It should be before the 2022 midterms. You hearing that, John Durham? You should release your report before the 2022 midterms. Otherwise, what the hell is getting you? What the hell are you CUS to use to us if you can't get the information out before an election? And that to me is absolutely critical. All right. Article says, in the meantime, a comprehensive account of documented Ukrainian collusion, you remember that word there? That's the big one, collusion, including efforts to assist the FBI in its 2016 probe of Manafort, is pieced together here for the first time. It draws from an archive of previously unreported records generated from a secret Federal Election Commission investigation of the Democrat National Committee, the DNC, that includes never-before-reviewed sworn affidavits, depositions, contracts, emails, text messages, legal findings, and other documents from the case. Real Clear Investigations also examined diplomatic call transcripts, White House visitor logs, lobbying disclosure forms, congressional reports, and closed-door congressional testimony. Well, that's always a big mystery itself, you know, as well as information revealed by Ukrainian and Democrat officials in social media postings, podcasts, and books. Yeah, see, this is the big deal. This is what makes this all so fascinating. One American News had a special report on this last night. They preempted one of their news shows for it. This is a big deal. So what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on beyond the war, is huge. Now, it looks like I've got a call here. Let me do a quick check here and see if this is one of our folks. Yeah, Chappie's on the line right now. I'm going to bring him on a bit early just because I find this all so fascinating. Chappie, Donnie Chapman, I'm on cell phone, so if I sound a little weird, that's why. So just to totally change the subject, Donnie, we got a new gun range coming to Milton here. This is exciting.
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard some they were looking for a location, but they got one confirmed now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talked to Jason, the owner, the other day. So we're going to have him on the show in April. Hopefully they'll open up in May. And that's going to be pretty interesting. Hey, have you heard this? I don't know if you have political folks. Are you finding what I'm finding, what everybody else seems to be reporting, that Ukraine is like the Democrats' money laundering, corruption, racketeering playground, and that there's no coincidence that impeachments came based on Ukraine, that there's a war in Ukraine, that Democrats are still doing all kinds of crazy stuff in Ukraine, that Brandon's reactions to Ukraine are based on his own either blackmail or party politics, stuff that the Democrats are kind of ordering to do, or I don't know what's going on, but there's more to Ukraine than simply a Russian invasion. What are your folks?
I haven't heard that. I've been kind of just staying out of the news other than what's pertinent and kind of keep what's going on here right now with, of course, the gas prices and travel and how that's affecting. But, yeah, I haven't really heard much other than, I heard a few volunteers going to Ukraine. It's not what they seem, once they go over there. So that's what I've heard.
Okay. Well, I think your guest is on now, too. So what I'm going to do is turn this over to you guys.
Okay.
And we can have a bunch of fun. So we have Taryn Colvin. We have another competitive shooter. So we're starting a little bit early because we've got Jim is off today. He's in Ireland. Well, sure, he's in Ireland for St. Patrick's Day. And we've got Derek is off on vacation. And I started the show late. So we're completely off schedule today, so it doesn't really matter. So let's get you guys on now since you're both here. And then I'll pick up the Ukraine story, in a little bit. So, Taryn, welcome to Action Radio. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I am very well. You sound just like Shirley. This is so funny. Do all women and guns sound the same? I'm teasing. But because I'm on my
I was about ready to say the same thing.
Exactly. Yep. You sound exactly like Shirley Wattrell, who is DC Project Director here in Florida. And so this is fascinating. Oh, yeah. So I'm going to start comparing, so women gun shooters. You all have that same wonderful, strong character, to your voice. It's really great. I mean, this is not an insult at all. It's definitely a compliment. But so Donnie, you noticed the same thing? That's kind of funny.
Yeah, I noticed that when she came on. I was like, oh, wow, she's got her radio voice. So,
well, thank you all. We're a very helpful community in our ladies segment, and we do what we need to do to help each other.
Yeah. And, oh, listen, the women who are gun activists, Second Amendment advocates, are fabulous. And you have absolutely my full support. And it's absolutely essential, I think, to countering, some of the stuff from the other groups that like the mom groups that use women, do the sympathy thing and all that. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about what you guys are doing. So, Donnie, I tell you what, feel free to introduce your guest. You guys tell me what's going on. And let's get back into competitive shooting and see what's happening.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I have Taryn T-Rex Colvin on our show today. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, what shooting disciplines you do, and we'll take it from there.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you all for listening and having me on the show. To begin, y'all probably want to know what I do for a living. Everybody seems to ask that question before we talk about guns, so... I manage our family-owned technology company, and I do our technical and finance work as well as design document management solutions for corporations. And I am also a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt. And then on the fun side of me, where we shoot every weekend, I really like Steel Challenge the most, but second to that would be Glock shooting, which is the GSSF League. And then it starts going down the list probably equally after that with USPSA, 3-Gun, and IDPA. And
wow.
That's about
awesome.
It. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got a couple of questions right away before Diane jumps in here. So, yeah, I mean, it's funny. I didn't think about what you did for a living as like the first priority. If you want to mention it, that's fine. But that may not necessarily define you, especially if you do something totally different than what your passion is. A lot of people, unless that is your passion, in which case that's different. I want to find out about the black belt. That's my first curiosity. Which of the martial arts did you study?
So Six Sigma is not a martial art. The Six Sigma Black Belt certification is a statistical approach to process management where you look to design efficient solutions and save money within companies after implementing these solutions.
Oh, okay. This isn't a martial arts black belt. This is a technology.
No.
Belt. So you just Oh.
We did that in the military. It takes from going step A to Z, they're trying to cut out all the middle. What's the most efficient time-saving, cost-savings way to go from A to Z without all this other stuff in the middle? This, am I right, Taryn? Kind of what Six Sigma is about, kind of what?
Yes,
what
and the process and procedures.
Okay. See, now I was all fired up to ask you a bunch of martial arts questions and see if that helped you with competitive shooting. This is where my mind goes right away. But actually,
I have seen all the Cobra Kai episodes, so I feel like I'm an expert.
Get squished like great. I Miyagi say, oh, hey, karate good. I. Anyway, so there's my Miyagi. All right.
She does take the quick approach to how she shoots. So it kind of applies in shooting her Six Sigma. So,
That actually makes a lot of sense. If you're, it sounds like you have an analytical mind. And so I'm always fascinated by how people think. And so if you're looking for business solutions, if you're looking for more efficiency, first of all, you won't find it at Action Radio. I don't think anything we do is all that efficient, but we sure have fun doing it. Maybe you could analyze this. That'd be an interesting thing to find out. But if you're analyzing, if you've got that kind of quick calculating mind, I bet you that does help you with competitive shooting. Something tells me.
It does. Referring back to how Gatlin indicated how he shot his stages. I've noticed after listening to him, he and I almost have an identical mindset on how we approach the problem-solving aspect of it, and we end up shooting very similar to each other. And here we are, two people that's never had that conversation with each other. So it tells me that types of shooters have identical mindsets at certain skill levels.
Yeah, see, I approach it, I see the world in pictures. I see the world in, interconnections. There are people that think linearly. And I imagine you and Gatlin have, A to B to C to D to E. You see the logical progression. You know exactly how you got there. See, I see A, B, C, and D and E all at the same time and see all the interconnections between them. So this is why I play guitar as opposed to piano. Piano is a very linear instrument. Guitar is much more pictures because all the chords have shapes, and I can relate to the shapes, but then I can relate to a linear keyboard, which makes no sense to me whatsoever. And so in shooting is conceptual, analytical, physical, mental. You got all these different things going on, and it'd be very interesting to sort of, this is why I like talking to competitive shooters, because how does your mind think? Because what you do happens at a very accelerated pace. You're actually shooting and moving before you've seen what happened to the previous target. Your mind is moving so fast, but it has to connect with the body. You've got to have the reflexes and be able to do that. So you have to almost not think. You're moving faster than thinking as you're doing this, if you're going to be good. And I'm not anywhere near that level. I'm still at the thinking, watching, stage of my shooting. But do you see the parallels? Do you see that sort of like, your brain almost becomes a computer where you're analyzing without thinking because you don't have time? Does that make any sense?
I do. And to build on that, there is dry fire kits made for Steel Challenge where you can set up all eight of these stages with little stickers that stick on your wall in your house. Well, I've gotten to the point in my training where I have now downsized each of those circles for me to aim at and marked each part in the circle that is the most efficient place to hit that plate in order to produce the fastest result whenever I'm transitioning.
This is interesting. How big are the circles on your wall?
It depends on which stage it is, but the smallest circle is probably an inch in diameter, and then it goes up in size from there, with the largest plate being, I would say, probably 8 inches tall. It depends on the perspective of how deep and far out the plates are spaced on how it will look on your wall.
So do you actually see the target clearly? Don't give away any trade secrets. I don't want to, ruin your competitive edge here. But how do you aim that fast, and how much aiming is there, and how much visualization where you're there, you know, because it's moving so fast. You're not thinking.
So I'll be happy.
Yeah.
So I'll be happy to share any information with anyone who's willing to get better and do their best. I think that we just need to develop athletes. But back to your question about how I rationalize speed. Before I shot steel challenge, I played fast pitch softball for 30 years. And so I'm used to hitting fastballs. I'm used to seeing something zoom at my face very quickly. When I did play softball, my batting average was very high because I was able to see the ball and adapt to the changes in the ball. So for me, shooting steel challenge, it's softball in reverse because I am now the pitcher sending the bullets to the plate. So I'm delivering the shots with my gun. So for me, because the focus is so intense, the plates are actually a little enlarged because my focus is so intense. When you lose the focus is when you start missing. So I use a lot of the traits and skills I learned as an athlete and translate that into steel challenge.
That actually makes a lot of sense. You know, hitting a baseball and shooting a gun actually have very direct parallels. You know, I equate sailing and flying to shooting. So, I mean, I see the parallels all over the place. This is fascinating. But for folks that haven't watched, you know, fastball, softball, that ball is as fast or faster than a baseball pitch. You know, the women that are doing under pitch, what is it, like 90 miles an hour some of those softballs are coming at you? How fast are they coming at you?
So it's about 70, 75 coming at you from 45 feet.
And a baseball mound is, what, 90 feet away or something? Or how far? Or is
yeah, and then, yeah, it's like, I think it's 90 feet, and then their average speed is 80 to 90. So I'm guessing the reaction time is probably similar, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. I think I've monopolized Donnie a little bit here. Donnie, why don't you get on this? But this, I love this conceptual stuff. It's fascinating. It's how, you know, brain connections. And if you can visualize, you're probably visualizing, you can see the path of the softball. One more question. I'm sorry. Now, can you visualize the path of the bullet? Can you see the vapor trail? Or do you just not have time for that? Or do you just visualize where the bullet's going? Is that part of it?
In steel challenge, I don't visualize the placement of the bullet because we're moving so quick. And I'm actually someone who shoots with one eye. I don't shoot with both eyes open like a lot of people do. So by the time I look at that one plate, my face is already on the next plate before the other shot is even completed, and I'm shooting ahead of myself.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we should. The one eye, two eye thing is a good question. Well, I'll ask Donnie that question too. The difference in competitive shooting, because you know, two eyes is depth perception, but one eye is probably better focus. Donnie, you want to talk about that? And then let me let you ask some questions.
Yeah, I shoot for a red dot. Oh, go ahead, Taryn.
No, I misunderstood who was talking, and it is your turn.
No, I'm actually asking Josh.
Oh, no, you're fine.
The one-eye, two-eye controversy, you know, but the one-eye, the strategy of one-eye versus two-eyes, because I think a lot, especially new shooters, you know, and I tend to shoot one-eye bullseye when I'm taking my time, but if I'm doing something more competitive, I tend to shoot two-eyes, but I'm definitely right-eye dominant and right-handed, so it's actually fairly easy for me to do that.
Yeah, Donnie, I shoot both eyes open because now you're target focused versus dot focused, which is total opposite of what people who shoot iron sights, you know, your front sight focused. So you're focusing so much on that front sight that your target should be blurry behind, past your front sight. Whereas it's kind of the opposite. You're on the red dot, you're focusing more on the target, and also it's this little voodoo magic where if you're doing it right, you're looking through your red dot, and you look at the target where it's clear, that red dot pops up right there. Mm-hmm. If you're focusing so much on that red dot's going to move, and you're going to have a hard time finding it. And that's, you know, everybody thinks that, hey, I'm going to go to a red dot, it's going to be easier. But if you shot irons for a while, it takes quite a bit to transition from shooting iron sights and then moving over to shooting red dot. It's not going to happen just like overnight. So a lot of people dry fire. You'll hear about different techniques about putting a piece of tape over the red dot so that you actually focus at the target and the dot shows there. It takes a while. But as far as shooting iron sights, I'm the same way. I shoot one eye for iron sights. But when it comes to red dot, even shooting out of the scope for a long range, I shoot both eyes open. Now, the other side of it, you'll hear on the tactical side, why people shoot both eyes open at red dot is for your peripheral vision, so you know what else is going on around you when you're shooting or if you're doing a room clean or stuff like that. So,
okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. But, you know, it all comes down to what you're able to adapt to and what works for you. Just because, you know, let's say for red dot, the majority of people shoot both eyes open. If it doesn't work for you and one eye works, stick with one eye. But there's also another thing which I was going to ask Taryn about. Taryn, so you've heard the term, of course, you know, calling your shots. You know, and calling your shots, Greg, is basically you shoot at a target and you know that you aimed at that spot and you know that it's going to hit. So you, in essence, call that shot so you don't have to sit there and wait for it to either hit the steel or hit the piece of paper on the A zone. So calling your shots is you know for sure when you pull that trigger, it's going to go on that spot. So you're not sitting there waiting for a reaction. You're moving on. And that's how people such as Taryn and Gatlin, they call their shots. Per se, and they know they don't have to wait for the reaction from the steel to move on to that next target. That's how they're so fast. But do you do that, Taryn? Do you call your shot, per se, because you know that your size for the red dot is on that spot? And how you just talked about how you practice with the smaller targets on dry fire that you know if you have your sight on that spot that it's gonna hit. So is that in your way of calling the shot?
Yes, because to me, this game of Steel Challenge is a game of muscle memory and adaptation. So I train for the muscle memory aspect by downsizing my plate because even a miss is still a hit because I've downsized now my training area to make it harder for me to train. And so that's my approach to it. And then going back to shooting with one versus two eyes, both of my eyes are equally dominant. So for me to shoot with one eye, both eyes open, it's really dizzy. It crosses all of my stuff. It doesn't equal out because I shoot pistol right-handed and I shoot rifle left-handed, and my body's constantly fighting for that dominance.
Oh, this
that's
is
right. I always notice that matches now, you now shoot. You shoot barrel one way and pistol the other.
And I write left-handed with my hands, but I bat right-handed and throw right-handed. It's so confusing in my brain.
No, this is fascinating. I have to ask about this because this is really incredible. Because, you know, I'm right-handed, I've been right-handed, but I play guitar, which requires my left hand to be completely independent of my right hand. Because, you know, the left hand is gripping the strings and, you know, doing pull-off stuff and all this rapid stuff, and the right hand is plucking the strings and using a pick and using fingers, and these are two completely different operations. So I understand the mental splitting of your body to do completely different things. But shooting, I shoot right-handed, I shoot right shoulder, I'm right eye dominant. So for me, it's much easier to be able to do that. Are there advantages to being able to be so ambidextrous, right-handed, left-handed? Or is it more of a challenge, Taryn? Or do you, you know, what are the good parts, what are the bad parts of having that kind of split dominance like that?
So I will say shooting a rifle, it actually, in USPSA, hurts me because most stages are built with a right-handed person mindset and advantage. But being able to ambidextrously shoot pistols, which I don't have a weak hand on my pistols, but I do it right-handed because most of your stuff is centered around being right-handed. And then when they throw a curveball and make it more advantageous for a left-handed person, I'll just switch hands and shoot left-handed. So that's where it's helpful for me.
So Donnie, do you think we can make courses more equal between right and left-handed orientation?
Oh, we try as much as possible in USPSA. It's just whoever the stage designer is. I mean, And it's not just the left and right-handed shooter. Correct me if I'm wrong, Taryn. You'll notice who makes a PCC stage and who designs a pistol stage. It kind of goes both ways. You can tell. And then you can tell, too, who's the left-handed shooter who designed the stage. But majority of what you're going to see with the angles and the leans or anything are predominantly more towards the right-handed shooter.
But I will say it's part of your training to be able to be adaptable and to be able to shoot anything that's presented to you. And I think that's what makes you a more balanced shooter is being able to do that.
Yep. And also, Greg, a lot of our stages, too, not giving any little hints for next month, but we do have part of the stages where you'll have to shoot with one hand, with your weak hand, or on PCC, which is your precision, you know, pistol caliber carbine, shoot on the opposite, you know, your weak-handed side shoulder. So there are opportunities that, you just have to be a well-balanced shooter. And it tests you. It tests you in both ways. But for someone like Taryn, who's, you know, dominant in both eyes and can shoot, you know, left and right-handed, she's got the advantage right there. So, which, as we call in the game, gaming, but in a good way.
Yep. Well, that's what I was curious about. You know, I always want to use all the skills you've got, but I'm just, you know, those kind of advantages, I think would be quite interesting. Just totally off the subject, Taryn, do you play a musical instrument at all?
I do, actually. So currently I still have my saxophone, but I started off on the clarinet, and then I moved into tenor saxophone. Then I also played alto and soprano saxophone, play the piano, and then tried my stab at bass guitar. I'm not very good on strings. It hurts my fingers, but I do like the woodwind instruments.
You'll build up the calluses on string instruments. Yeah, there's the most amazing musician I've ever heard. Again, totally off subject. Doreen Ketchum. She's in New Orleans. And so if you look up some Doreen Ketchum videos, she's a clarinet player. And she'll just sit out there in the lawn chair, and she'll have like a tuba player and a drummer, maybe just the three of them, maybe a couple of other folks. But she sings and plays and is unbelievable. So if you want to look at it for a good model for clarinet playing, she's just amazing. But that all ties in with my theory that musicians and shooters and pilots and sailors and all these different things that we do, there's a commonality. The enjoyment, the skill level, the brain things, the way we think about this kind of stuff. They also, it's just my personal theory, but they all seem to tie together, and they all help each other.
Funny you say that. There is quite a bit of pilots in our shooting community. Several certified pilots that I can name, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it. In fact, hey, Dottie, I just had an idea. A flying shooting rally. So you have to. So everybody lands in our little Milton Airport here, and then you take off for some place, you know, a couple hundred miles away that has a shooting range, and you got to do the flying rally part. You got to land, you know, take your firearms to the range, shoot a course of fire, go back, drive back, hop in your plane and fly home, and have it like a time trial. I mean, has anybody ever done that?
I mean, it sounds
maybe
fun.
In Alaska, but that sounds fun. You know, you can, because then you can incorporate your, you know, your flight planning, where you're going to land, what's the most efficient. You can use your Six Sigma, what's the most efficient flight plan, where's the closest place you're going to land to the range, how to get to the range. Yeah, that'd be pretty fun. I mean, you're using all your skills right there.
We could have a triathlon. You could throw in a bike ride, too.
I just bought a bike last week, and that was like I was 5 years old learning to re-ride again.
You can do it. I stopped riding for about 20 years. In fact, my bike's in the shop right now getting a new seat for my particular decade of life. And it's just, I love bike riding. I've always loved bike riding. And after 20 years, I hopped on. It took, you know, a couple of minutes, but not much more than that. So, it'll come right back to you. But, triathlon, Donnie. You don't love bike riding. Bike riding is wonderful. I'm fascinated by the people that always have earbuds. They have to have music. I just like the breeze and the birds and the getting out in the fresh air. But, Donnie, we've got to come up with a triathlon. Shooting, flying, and sailing, or something totally bizarre that no one's ever thought of, you know, have a multiple event like that. Because they have the biathlon, you know, they're shooting and skiing, so why can't we have incorporated, because it would be really expensive, but, you know, maybe some kind of a shooting triathlon that involves two other things. Maybe a bike ride.
Like the great, make it like the Great Race, you know, like that TV show, but with the guns.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get from range of the range and figure out how you're going to do it. Are you going to sail there? Are you going to boat there? Are you going to cycle there?
Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
No, I would include a boat ride, a bike ride, and a shooting course of shooting fire.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
This could be really fun.
Oh, yeah.
See, Karen, this is what we do here. There's no limit to the crazy things we will talk about and the ideas that we have. And they seem crazy at first, but then you do them, and then it's not so crazy. This is why I like talking about it. All right, back to you, Donnie. Your turn.
So Taryn, you talked to, of course, you know, Steel Challenge, your bread and butter. What classifications are you, and what's probably your favorite divisions, or what divisions do you shoot?
So my favorite things to shoot are rifles, and I'm most highly ranked on Rimfire Rifle Open, which is a rifle with a red dot on it. I am currently master on that and a thimble away from becoming grandmaster, so I hope to do that in the next month. Then my next closest classification is Rimfire Rifle Iron, which that is a rifle with iron sights on it. I am A-class there, but hope to make master this weekend at this tournament I'm shooting, by the way, which is Brooks Gap. It's a level 2 tournament, so this is a state level. And then I shoot Rimfire Pistol Open, which is a pistol with a rev dot on it. I think I'm B-class on that. And then Rimfire Pistol Irons, which is, of course, a regular pistol with iron sights on it. I think I'm C-class on that. And then I also shoot my Glock, which I want to plug Chappie here because he has come up with a fantastic ammo recipe. And it's like shooting pillows from that Glock. And I want everyone hearing this to know that he ships and he can get that ammo to y'all. So holler at Chappie Tactical for your ammo needs. He also makes holsters. So anything y'all need to compete to be successful in that sport, Chappie can definitely handle that for you.
Hey, Chappie,
well,
you guys start doing that, too. I want to hear more information about what you do. That's part of the deal of being on the show here is you get to mention all this.
Yeah.
Karen, thank you very much. And for all your accomplishments, let me give you a round of applause, Karen. Let's get this going here.
Thank you.
Woo! There we go. But
Have the Ric Flair woo? Because I like that one.
What did you want?
I said, do you have the Ric Flair woo?
No, we don't have a woo. We just have that.
Golly.
We have gone.
Okay, well, that was pretty fun.
Okay, let me get to the I haven't played this for a while. Hopefully it's not I'm trying to reset my volume, but we do have this sound. That'll get your attention.
That's a pretty cool walkout sound, like a wrestler.
Yeah.
Normally I'll do that when people are arguing. No, because I don't take to arguing very well, but it's happened so rarely I don't really have to. Now I just do it for fun. But that's what the gong was for. Anyway, back to you, Donnie.
So, Karen, which one, you said you like rifle. Do you prefer more towards the 22 rimfire, or do you prefer 9mm, or are you kind of in between or both? And also, you mentioned master class, and you're so close to grandmaster, so are you right on the heels of Gatlin? I noticed there's that competitiveness between you two, and it's great to watch, and you both are absolutely fascinating to watch, and you're both super fast. So, Greg, Taryn and Gatlin are friends, and you see them at the range together, and there is that competitive edge, but like I said, they're friends. It's absolutely amazing to watch these two shoot at a match. So.
Oh, I intend to.
Yeah.
I hope to do that. Like, if you want to do videos, feel free. In fact, if you want to bring Gatlin and Taryn on the same show, you know, like maybe once a month or something, just to come on and give their competitive updates and what's going on and the various events, you know, feel free. Taryn, you're always welcome on the show. So you're
well, thank you. I appreciate that. Awesome. Yeah, so Gatlin and I are actually spotted tomorrow to shoot against each other. However, I do want to say I have an immense amount of respect for Gatlin. I am nowhere close to his caliber yet. He is in such a finely tuned state. I have a lot of training and development to go. I've only been shooting Steel Challenge for about a year and a month at this point. So I have a lot more training and development to go to catch up to his caliber. But I do use him as an inspiration on getting faster because he is so dialed in and tuned. I have another teammate, Nick Brandt. He is also extremely fast. He's actually the number one master in the world right now. And so with us being local to the same club, I use him as my training partner because he's more accessible, whereas Gatlin is the next state over, which now I'm shooting with Gatlin more often, so I'm watching him and observing him and learning traits from him.
You know, it happens so fast, though. are you allowed videos of each other, and are you able to slow them down at all? It's like Jerry Mitchell, you know, if you want to see what he's doing, you better slow down the video because you're not going to see it happen. It's so fast. Are you able to do that, or is that not quite sporting?
When I have filmed other competitors, I have always asked permission because I think it's respectful to ask another competitor if it would be okay to film their work. If they have it publicly posted on social media, you can analyze it like that. But I do think that you need to have respect for your competitor to ask them if that would be okay to take film of them.
Yeah. But I would just be curious I imagine that would help you tremendously if you're able to do that, if the competitors didn't mind being either videoed or you know, using what they're doing as a way to get better. And you're right. 1 year, that's pretty new. So it sounds like to me you have a pretty fast learning curve. Something tells me you're picking this up pretty quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've always been a pretty quick and adaptable learner, even in my IT job. Like, for example, yesterday I'm doing an install at a casino customer of ours, and their network security is so tight. Well, here I am having to learn on the go and punch through this network security with the little bit of information I had. So I have to be adaptable even in my career. So they kind of translate into each other whenever I shoot.
You know, it's interesting. Your career helps shooting. Shooting helps your career. Everything we do ties in. And so I want to make sort of like a general, you know, plug for people to take up new hobbies, take up new activities. You know, it might turn into, you might be a champion of something that you never knew you could be a champion of. But the more things that you can accomplish, and I really believe in personal accomplishment as a way to just boost your own confidence, self-esteem, and everything else, to do things that you never thought you could do. To reach for things you never thought you could reach. I mean, Action Radio, you know, the dream of putting a citizen legislature, you know, combined with a radio show, something no one's even tried before as far as I know. I mean, I looked online, you know, so we're the first to do what we do here. We actually write bills and submit them to all levels of government. You know, a bunch of us are going to go talk to Matt Gaetz, our representative here, First District in Florida. And so just to be, but the concept of putting two things together that no one's ever thought of, that was kind of cool, I thought. It's taken a lot of work, but here we are in the situation, you know, where we're able to combine those two things in ways that, you know, we're breaking new ground every day. We're breaking, you know, we're making, you know, historical things. I'm working on a Bill of Rights for Australia, you know, and so there's these fascinating things happening. But your ability to put together your corporate analytical ability with your music, you know, with because that's hearing, that's a listening thing, that's a whole different part of your brain. Now with shooting, which is more eye coordination, hand coordination, you know, it's I'm wondering if the visualization of being a musician, because you have to hear it in your head, you know, you hear it in your head before you play it. That's how I play guitar solos. I've been playing rock guitar for, you know, 40 years now, but I actually hear solos in my head, you know, a split second before I play them. That's how I'm able to play them. And in the same way, I'm wondering if you can sort of visualize and use the musical part of your brain, the conceptual part, you know, and this is why, well, we sort of talked about this, but, you know, being able to tie the conceptual part of your brain with the analytical part of your brain, put those together because of the activities you're doing, and they actually will help each other.
Yeah,
and
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah,
because when I am training to be faster, I listen to a video of someone faster than me. It doesn't matter who that person is, but I listen to how it sounds. And so, like, for example, my favorite stage is 5 to go. Well, there's another shooter. His name is Kenny Nagg, which is a astronomically fast shooter. He's right now, I think, the fastest guy, if I'm not mistaken. But his tempo on my favorite stage is doop. So I'm having to train my body to land that gun, keep it still, because you're moving, stop, in essence, because you have to pause for a second to make the shot to swipe it on around. So you correct your tempos through dry fire, and then you make it live at the range.
Tempos. Can you explain a little more detail? I'm kind of curious. Donna, you might want to get on this too. So when you say tempos, what exactly are you talking about?
Okay, so let's reference back to Gatlin's podcast where he talks about how he slices his stages into little pieces. So his pieces is equal to how my tempos do. He puts his into pieces. I put mine into tempos. So, like, for example, roundabout, he talked about how it went, Okay, well, you know, my tempo is a little bit different on how my brain rationalizes that shoot. Mine goes, tat, 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 tat. It gets you to the same result. It's how your body understands the rhythm of that stage.
Now, that makes sense. So the musical aspect of your brain helps helps set a tempo because you have to have rhythm to play music. And so if you can set up a rhythm of music, you can set up a rhythm on the shooting range. It's just the things happening a whole lot faster. I never thought of it like that,
but that's an interesting concept. Yeah, I would agree with you there.
Yeah. Okay. Donnie?
And it is true, Greg, because when you hear somebody a stage over, you hear that tempo, and, you know, you can tell what stage they're in. You can also tell what shooter's shooting. See, I can tell when Gatlin's shooting. Especially like you mentioned, Taren Roundabout, he has that dink, 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 dink. You know, it's like fast, and then it's like, it sounds musical. So, Greg, I think there is like a little bit of aspect, like you said, to the analytical side, to the musical side, the way Taren breaks it down to a tempo, how Gatlin breaks it down to a slice, that you get the same results, but it's all how you approach it. And then, again, it goes back to, I think, even Taren's way of, you know, going back to the Six Sigma, what's the best way and the fastest way to hit all the targets and then get to the stop point? And again, it all ties in together. It's absolutely amazing. So,
keep in mind, everyone's plan's different. Like, for example, I'm heavier. My body weight is centered differently than a man. And I'm also left-handed on rifles. So, there's different variables for each different type shooter. Like a junior child that's barely 5 foot tall would have a different approach than someone that's 6 foot two that shoots. So you have to be adaptable to how your body understands how to do it.
Well, that makes sense. You know, especially kids, they haven't learned what they can't do yet. So I think we've talked about this before, Donnie, but the younger shooters, you know, take to this because, you know, adults get cynical. They're, you know, you get the, you know, whether it's a job or any other place in life, family, you know, that sort of, you know, is there to break your confidence, you know, sort of, you know, get in your way, tell you what you can't do, or that's a crazy idea. Why would you want to go be a competitive shooter? That's a stupid idea. Well, it's a stupid idea for them, not for you. And so, but kids don't have that problem. Kids can just go out, especially if they have a supportive family, they'll just go do it. They don't know what they can't do, so they do it anyway. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. Hey, actually, Taren, that's a good segue there, Greg, let's talk about the mental aspect of the game. You know, in shooting, USPSA, everybody talks, you know, you hear people that it's a physical game, but actually in the sport of shooting, you will hear people talk about the mental aspect of the game, and there's actually instructors that really focus on the mental part of the game. Steve Anderson is a great example of a shooter who really focuses on the mental aspect. Can you kind of touch on that, Taren, how a lot of it's mental as far as like kind of like golf? You know, if you have a bad stage, don't dwell on it. Move on to the next one and just focus on that and how to stay mentally strong during a match.
Sure. So a lot of what I did as an athlete and the coaching and conditioning as an athlete translates into competition shooting because that is also a sport. But, okay, for example, I'm here in Birmingham, Alabama, preparing for this level 2 match tomorrow. Today's a rainout. Now, if I was not mentally prepared, hey, there's a rainout today, that would affect me mentally for walking in tomorrow knowing I'm shooting on the side of the field. So what you have to do mentally as a competitor, one, I feel the first thing you should do is get a good playlist. I don't know if you noticed this, but like most every professional athlete has headphones in their ear before a game. And this is so it gets them mentally calmed down. It gets their breathing going. And you want to get your heart rate as calm as possible. And then leading up to the day of competition, you need to mentally focus. I actually will envision exactly my procedure walking up from when the RO tells me to make ready to loading my magazine. I procedurally visualize every single thing I do. I visualize shooting the stage. I visualize my unload and show clear. I burn that procedure into my head. And while you're competing, in order to stay level, you have to not let your emotions overtake you. You have to maintain the same even-keeled mindset. No matter how difficult it gets, no matter how hot it gets, no matter how cold or rainy it gets, your tempo needs to be even-keeled the whole time. Once you step off the field and get back with your teammates, you can have fun and laugh. But at these major matches, I wouldn't even say break character too much, because your mentality needs to be zoned and focused in order to maintain the consistency in your results. That's if you're shooting on a highly competitive level. If you're there for fun, go out and have a good time, you know.
Yep. And it's kind of like you're saying, Greg, you know, how you visualize and you hear the sound prior to you playing that tune or that song. Mm-hmm. It kind of goes hand in hand the same way. As far as, like, how correct me if I'm wrong, it's kind of like once you step in that shooter's box, everything outside distractions go out the window. It's kind of like how a baseball player or softball player gets in the batting box. You're focused solely on that part of time right now. And it's kind of like, have you ever, we know there's a 11-year-old, Carly, that shoots, and it's like she's this, you know, when you look at her, you're like, okay, she's a little girl. But once she gets in that box, she's a killer. It's just absolutely amazing. And I think that's kind of the same way. She gets in there, she gets in the zone, and then she's back like, oh, thank you, and walks off.
So you can't believe this happened. I was lucky enough to be able to shoot with this prodigy last October at the Hattiesburg Mississippi State match. Man, she is something fun to watch. That girl, first of all, she's teaching me stuff, helping me get faster. And here I am, 38 years old and taking tips from an 11-year-old. And she's got the skill level, so I'm listening.
And then that's when the first time I saw her last year was at South Georgia match, which is coming up next weekend. And I was just like, at first, you know, I was sitting there thinking like, oh, that's cool. You know, they must be local. They're wanting to try it out. As soon as they stepped in the box, I was like, what happened? Because it was just absolutely amazing. And she just walked off, and they're like, oh, yeah, she's master class. She's going to shoot at Worlds. And then didn't she get bumped up to grandmaster at Worlds? I think she...
Something like that. I know she went in there and smoked everybody. And Valdosta, she smoked everybody in Hattiesburg. I mean, she's phenomenal. She's actually out of Louisiana, by the way. But
yes, that's right.
Awesome, awesome person. She is so cool.
But... Greg, like you were talking to, you know, how about kids, what they don't know. And it kind of goes, you know, it's better that she's learning these fundamentals at a younger age. She's not learning bad habits. She's learning the safety. And she's an athlete, too. You know, she's real competitive in soccer as a child as well. But, yeah, and she's, you know, it's great for her already at that age. She already has the mental strength compared to even some adults. You know, hey, right here, I'm in the zone. I'm here to focus. I'm going to maintain safety. And she has her game plan already in her head because she's sitting there. I noticed that, too, with her and a lot of the other teen shooters. You're right. I always see them listening to music prior to walking up to their stage. So that's something I've never done. I might actually give that a try. I mean, it works for Michael Phelps swimming. So Taryn's kind of like the Michael Phelps right there, listening to headphones on the side. So I don't know if you noticed this.
My earphones are Bluetooth. I'm jamming out the whole time I'm talking to y'all. It keeps me leveled out.
Really?
I might have to start doing that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'll be honest with you. I grew up close to Pritchard. I'm sure y'all know where that is. And so I like a lot of hip-hop. So I'm jamming out to club music while I'm at the range.
That's fascinating. No one's ever told me before that they are actually listening to headphones or earphones while they're on the show. That's interesting. I had a different question. Oh, I'm going to ask about that in a minute. But it's now, do men and women shoot together, or are there separate men's and women's events?
We shoot together, but there are ladies-only events, yes.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is that shooting seems particularly well-suited for women. You know, competing, especially against guys or just competing, because it's not, you know, you don't have to be like a Michael Phelps. You know, you don't have, you know, yes, there's a physical component to it, but there's so much of it that's mental and so much you can bring to it that you're not, you know, to be a major league football player, you've got to be, you know, fast, huge, whatever. To be a basketball player, you've got to be tall, you know. But shooting, it doesn't seem like there's any particular you know, required physical characteristics, and it certainly doesn't require, you know, you be, you know, a man or a woman to compete in this sport. It seems very equal in that respect, that it's who you are as an individual, what you can bring. There's not a certain criteria that you need to qualify for, like a, you know, a linebacker kind of thing. Do you think that's part of the attraction to shooting?
I think so. Plus, who doesn't like shooting explosives? I do.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that
actually, Karen, you want to talk about that?
Point. All right, go ahead, Jeffy. Then I got a question I just thought of.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about that, Taryn? You know how we talked about it the other day. You know how everybody's on an equal playing field here. You know, it's not how everybody has a across the board man, woman, whatever. Everybody's on the same playing field in shooting. Can you touch on that? How that's what makes a sport great.
Yeah. So in our line of sports, and I say sports with an S because there's different disciplines you can pursue in the sporting aspect of marksmanship, but in our sports, you're essentially competing against yourself and only with yourself, and you are trying to be better than you were the time before, and that's why there's such a, I guess I would say a mathematical result on your shooting sports, because if you're a member of the league, each week after you shoot, your stats update. So then you're able to track yourself and see how well you did. You can log into Practice Score Competitor and really drill down and analyze, all right, well, here's my splits. Here's how quickly I performed this. This is how many alpha shots I got or misses, however you wanted to analyze it. And you could craft your training plan from that. Our sports are literally designed from the most recreational person coming out for the first time to enjoy themselves, on up mm-hmm. to the person that is trying to garner the attention of a major manufacturer such as Glock and, hey, guys, I want to work hard and hopefully get recognized by your team and shoot for your team. There's something in between all of what I mentioned for every person, including people with disabilities. I shoot with a lady out of Mississippi who is in a mobilized wheelchair, and she blows it out, man. She's awesome.
That's wonderful. That's really amazing. Yeah, speaking of Glock, I'd like to have them as a sponsor myself, actually. If they want to believe in freedom and what some of the things we do here, you know, Glock, if you're listening, feel free to give me a call, 215-383-3832. We have a cultural thing going on. I know it's in the schools, elementary schools, boys in particular. This sort of like an anti-masculine. Don't be boys. Don't be loud. Don't think about guns. Don't play with guns. Guys, don't draw a picture of a gun in school. You know, and so I'm wondering if we need, you know, to encourage both men and women or young men and young women to get into the shooting sports, you know, because it's really good for people. It's good for their independence. And it is really fun to shoot things and knock them down. You know, it's loud. It's exciting. It's like when we had our drag races on. You know, the fumes, man, the smell of the gasoline, that burning rubber. It's exciting. And I think we're almost living in a time where there's a faction that wants to take that away from us. You know, and as much as girls are encouraged to do things, I think we need to – don't forget the boys, too. We need to get the boys out there, you know, shooting. And whereas they used to be able to shoot, you know, I've heard stories that back, you know, 50s and 60s in New York, you know, they were taking 22 rifles on the subway to their rifle range in the basement of their high school in New York City, you know, and that culture has gone. So there's a big thing you can do. The more young people you can encourage to get into this, I think the better it is, because I think as a society, we're kind of, you know, trying to make everybody very passive, and shooting is a very active thing. And it's just, I think it's just good for us. So the bigger the sport gets, the better. The more people you can bring in, the more people that can be independent. You know, and especially with a culture that's trying to suppress anything like guns, this is critical what you're doing. You know, so as
I agree,
shooter,
and
yeah, go ahead.
Right, and I wholeheartedly agree with you there. Chappie and I actually talked about this not too long ago about the development of the beta male, because the culture is no longer developing alpha males, and by that I mean is men who hunt and fish, men mm-hmm. who are craftsmen, because if you talk to a man that is in his 40s and above, he probably hunts and fishes or knows how to do it. He probably has craftsman skills. Whereas men below that age group, which is another reason why I'm 38 and still single, they don't have these skills. And so even younger than that, my little guy is 10. He's not my real son, but I claim him. He hasn't hunted. He hasn't fished. He's not building things with his hands. And so the best I can do is get him out to the range and expose him to his marksmanship skills.
You know, that's really fascinating, and the whole beta male concept, I worry about it, but I'm not in the schools. I don't see what's going on, but I know there's definitely a reduction in boys for what they can be. You know, don't dream. Don't do crazy things. Don't be eccentric. And I've talked about this. We actually have an Action Radio Man page, and some of the things that we talked about that on that page are these very things that they're taking away from men. It's almost like it's a reversal. It's like young girls are encouraged, young women are encouraged, you know, because it's really cool to do that. On the other hand, boys, you know, they're not being able to be creative. You know, and I'm not a big hunting and fishing person. That, you know, my father taught me how to fish when I was younger. It didn't have an appeal for me for some reason.
Right.
But I went into music and I went into flying. I mean, I pursued aviation at a very young age. I soloed at 16. You know, in an airplane. And when I'm in my airplane by myself at 16 flying around New England, I'm sure I was every bit as serious as a 16-year-old on a shooting range. You know, and the fact that we're young really had not much to do with it. It was our zone. That was our accomplishment. That's what we did. And we're losing our rugged individualism, especially with the boys. And I don't know what to do about that other than get them out of the government schools. But there's this, the more you can do with you know, let's get the alpha males back. You know, and that is a problem. That is a serious problem in our society. Yeah.
And it goes back to, like Terrence saying, too, you know, skills. That's starting to lack, you know, because of the whole, hey, you need to go to a four-year college, and then, you know, somebody gets a degree in liberal arts, and then, you know, they're paying, you know, all this money back for loans, mm-hmm. and then they're working at the local coffee shop after they graduate a four-year degree versus promoting the two-year technical trade schools where they're coming out making, you know, $60,000 as a welder, you know, no student loans, if not low-cost loans. They have a skill. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, they can move on in a couple of years to management if they want versus, you know, their peer who went to school for 4 years. And we're losing that.
Yep.
And then on the whole end, then that's why we're losing in America, because we've lost a lot of those perishable skilled labor that we're outsourcing to China in other countries. We're losing that. And it goes back to just society as a whole. You know, you're, like parents said, you know, we're making this beta male. Don't be rough. Don't be rugged. Don't have a perishable skill. It's absolutely terrible. And then, you know, we're seeing a lot more kids are so disrespectful now, you know, and everybody's on this, you know, do things for the Instagram. But I will say the opposite, though, and we can both attest to this, you know, you go to the range, and especially in Steel Challenge, there are some absolutely great teenage shooters. And the thing I notice about them is they're so well-disciplined. They're actual, you know, they're just genuine. They'll sit there and shake your hand and thank you for volunteering to be out there, well-behaved. I guarantee all of them are probably, well, a lot of them are, like we know Pineapple Shooters. She's a straight-A student. She's involved in our thing. You know, they're not going to do anything to jeopardize them from getting to shoot a sport. They're not going to get in trouble. They're not going to not get good grades. They're not going to do other things. So, you know, I think that culture, if we can transfer that to the rest of America to get involved like that, I think will help. Because, and there's these other kids we shoot with, too. Now they're both in college as engineers and also getting a second degree in welding, you know. And
awesome.
It's I think we're just kind of losing here in America because we have lost those skills and we're trying to become so PC, and it's terrible. I hate seeing
mm-hmm.
that stuff.
Oh, yeah, you don't find that on this show. I have some of the most un-PC, you know, sarcastic political pieces that I made. It's really pretty amazing what we do. But you've got to be fearless. You've got to be fearless. I really want to hear, like, a really beta male conversation you had, Sharon, but I want to get Pianki on the show. He wants to join us here, one of our favorite regular callers here. So, Pianki, you're on with Taryn T-Rex Colvin, and we have to find out what the T-Rex stands for. And we got Donnie Chappie Chapman, and I don't have a nickname yet, but it's only a matter of time before it's Greg, I don't know, the something Penglis. You guys can give me a name. Give me a call sign.
Yep.
That'd be fine. Pianki, welcome to the show. I know you're there, dude. I made you live.
Yeah, T-Rex, good morning. T-Rex is absolutely right about the feminization of these males nowadays. And, you know, I've noticed that myself. I have been for a long time noticing how you just got a different male out here today, and it's really dangerous. You know, shooting is something that they should learn early on, as well as boiling water. And just like the other things we talk about here on your show, Greg, is that, the Constitution and Bill of Rights and the history of the United States, all those things, being mechanical with your hands. Also, you have to have intellectual minds, too. There's nothing wrong with going to college. You know, one of the things with college is that there's millions and millions of dollars of scholarships that's available for students that they don't even that they don't qualify for. So,
well, let me.
That's
let
my.
So this is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to ask both Taryn and Donnie this: do the gun companies offer apprenticeships in gunsmithing, manufacture, you know, and do you guys have like a Young Eagles program, like an Experimental Aircraft Association has a Young Eagles program to get kids involved in experimental aircraft and designing and building and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Do the gun companies have mentor, apprenticeship, internships? Do they, you know, they have programs like that? That would certainly help, especially if they went to the high school.
Yes. So, I'll speak on Glock because that's a brand I closely work with and identify with. If you join their GSSF League, which is the Glock Sports Shooting Foundation, your annual membership, I believe, is $25 or $30. Once you are a member, you can go to glocktraining.com. From there, you have your gunsmithing courses, which would be your Glock Armorer course. You also have access to your Glock, your Glock Operator course, which shows you the how to maneuver and use your gun proficiently. You also have Brilliance and Basics course, which shows you from a fundamental perspective how to use your pistol. You also have MOS courses for how to shoot your pistol with a red dot. So I know SIG also offers that too. But for other brands, I don't know specifically what they use because I'm only using the Glock training that I have access to get better on my Glock pistols because that's what I shoot.
Yeah. I've always wondered if the gun manufacturers would offer like a lesson. So if you buy a Glock, you know, included with your, if you're a first time gun buyer, especially, you know, would be some kind of a lesson with a local Glock instructor like you or anybody who had the time to do that kind of thing. You know, it'd be a paid thing, but it'd be great to have, I think, initial shooters, especially get them off on the right foot. Because you can buy a gun and go to a shooting range with absolutely no training whatsoever, and it'd be nice to have some kind of a lesson involved, especially for the new folks.
I believe the state of Mississippi. Go ahead.
Let's go, Donnie. I haven't heard from him for a bit, and then we'll get to Taryn.
I've thought about offering up the team to learn about reloading and manufacturing ammo, and it started with my daughter because when I take her shooting, she's very analytical too. And she wanted to know exactly the components of what makes up the ammunition, what part causes the explosion and causes, you know, the powder to burn. So, you know, I've offered that to teams around here so that they can kind of get that manufacturing aspect and learn, you know, on the micro level how a firearm works and how ammunition works. But as far as other mentorship programs at Escambia River Gun Club, we are starting up a program called the Weeble Shooting, and it's teaching them about how to shoot a 22 rifle, and then it works on their fundamentals, safety, and then it moves on up. Okay, now we're going to shoot short distance. Okay, now that you've mastered that, we're going to teach you about long distance. And also in between that, we're giving them a history lesson about firearms and about safety. So that's something we're doing at our range. Sometimes there's also what turns the Appleseed shooting. They offer that too, and they give history about shooting and about marksmanship as well. Glock's they're a big component as far as offering courses to everybody that's teaching. Like she said, SIG, there's also the Infinity Firearms shooting experience out in Texas, which is like going basically to the Ferrari factory of guns. So, yeah, there's some
the resources are there, is what it sounds like, which is good. Just that people hopefully will be encouraged, especially with all the new shooters out there, to be encouraged to think of their firearms as, yes, self-defense, but it's more than that. It can be your recreation. It can be your food on the table. You know, it can be your challenge. It can be your competition. It can be your new career. You know, there's so many aspects of this that I think, you know, the more we do, the better. But, yeah. Yeah, I wonder, I'm just thinking, you know, beta male is a metaphor. We've got a whole society that is disempowering people, that is becoming more of a groupthink kind of attitude. And individual accomplishment, you know, seems to be less important than it used to be. I mean, I don't think we emphasize the Olympics enough. Of course, China was a different situation. But things like the Olympics, things like competitive sports, individual accomplishment, individual achievement. Shooting is a great way for someone who may not be, you know, a natural basketball, baseball, hockey, football player kind of person, to be competitive and recognize individual achievement and get the satisfaction of individual accomplishments. Just a thought.
Yep, I would agree with you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's going on gun tech? I want to talk about the actual – Johnny, did you have something? I didn't mean to interrupt. We have still more time, too.
Oh, no.
I started.
Yeah, I was just – Johnny, did you have – Taryn, you talked about Glock and all that and how sponsors and stuff. Do you have any sponsors, and can you talk about that?
For me, I would say the word partnership probably fits in that better than the word sponsor. I have several people who have helped me get to where I'm at, but I think the definition a lot of people think of when they hear the word sponsor is, oh, it's free and I'm sponsored. Well, that's not exactly how that works in the shooting world. So you do have some who are legitimately 100% sponsored, where their entry fees are comps, where their gear is comps, their ammo is comps, and et cetera. But the vast majority of shooters in our community, I call it partnerships, because you find local businesses. Like, I'm going to use Donnie as an example.
Okay.
He takes care of me with my 9mm ammo from my Glock. He is my partner. And because he takes such good care of me, I said, hey, I'll put your logo on my jersey. So, you know, now I'm representing him and able to talk about his ammo and help him get more business because they're seeing his good product in action. Another great company that is good to us is Hunter's HD Gold, Brian out of, I believe, Pelham. He has ANSI-rated shooting glasses that are really good to shoot in, helps you see better, and so it helps you shoot better because you can see better. Another great partner we have is Ray with Zero Sports. He makes all these really sweet-looking jerseys you see everybody shooting in. So, and honestly, on my jersey, I have a little badge for Mom and Dad. They've been sponsoring me since birth. So, you know, I just kind of I did the serious stuff and made the joke, but mostly the sponsor is me with my income. But I do have many partners that I've worked with along the way that have helped me achieve my goals. And without the partnerships and our professional, you know, dealings and courtesies with each other, we wouldn't be able to get where we are.
One of the things I'm looking for is more sponsors for Action Radio. But we do things here that no one's ever done before. No one's ever written citizen legislation from a radio show. No one's ever had regular people submit bills directly to members of Congress based on the things that they want to do or change or improve. You know, so we're such a new concept here. That's the battle I'm fighting. At least with shooting sports, people, you know, in a lot of ways know what it is. It's been around for a while. And something like what I'm doing has not been around at all. And so it's very interesting, you know, to see where this is going to go too. So So maybe you can introduce me to some people. We'll talk off the air. It's gonna be kind of fun. We'll see what happens. So, Donnie, back to you.
Taryn, do you have any matches that are coming up or that you're training for? Some big matches? And can you talk about
them? I do. So actually, this weekend I am in town in Birmingham shooting a level 2 match. It's at Brock's Gap. And this is a state-level match. Gatlin and I actually shoot tomorrow. And then next week I'm going to the Georgia State match in Valdosta, Georgia, which Gatlin and I will also shoot again at that week. And then a month from now we go to the big boy shoot. That's the level four match for Worlds. And this is where you are competing the best against the best. And this is where I really hope to achieve my level of grand mastery on my rifle optic. And golly, if I can do it in enough time, I'd like to do it on my iron sight rifle too. So I'm really going to be working hard this next 30 days to try to achieve those goals.
Well, Gila, can you tell everybody where Worlds is being held at this year?
I sure can. So Steel Challenge headquarters is located in Talladega, Alabama at the CMP Park. I believe that breakdown is Civilian Marksmanship Park. And it's an absolutely beautifully stunning venue for shooting. They have a massive clubhouse which overlooks mountains. It might be hills. It looks like mountains to me. I'm from Mobile. Overlooks mountains, and you can go out there and have your coffee before you go to the range. They have very nice restroom facilities for shooters whenever they need to go get freshened up or whatever. And then, I mean, there's just miles of shooting area in that place. And so if the Worlds follow what it did last year, this should be televised. So you should be able to stream it on Facebook by going to the Steel Challenge Facebook page or either finding their YouTube channel and looking that way.
And I think it's also on USPSA.live, I believe, will be televised as well. So you'll have to watch it, Greg. Look for the Team Chappie jerseys and look for T-Rex's jersey that she's going to debut that day. So.
And Donnie and I are going to do a dance on camera.
Oh, there we go. I want to see that. I want to see videos. More of it. Well, you can always, and you're always welcome to post on the Action Radio Gun Group. In fact, I should get you in there. We have an Action Radio Gun Group, so anything you want to post, gun ideas, articles, competitions, sports, videos, anything to do with guns, feel free. We get a little political occasionally, actually a lot, but I want to encompass all. You know, all facets of gun world into that. But you haven't told me yet how you got the name T-Rex. T-Rex.
All right, I'll tell you. So, let's see. I'm trying to think how old I am. Back about, I guess, 15 years ago, they had a women's football full contact league. And I was on the D-line. And I got it because they told me that I would just run through the offense, just tearing them up. And so my coach was like, T-Rex, tearing it up. Because tearing.
Oh,
T-Rex tearing it up. So the name just stuck. And then I was like, you know, let's just keep using that as a nickname. It's a good marketing idea. And when I was at the shipyard, I was a shipbuilder before I did software. And they would call me T-Rex because I was building scaffold and all other crap on the ship with them. And just stuck. And here I am today with this goofy-looking T-Rex on my shirt. That's a unicorn holding a little princess wand with my pink rifle. I'll have to send you a picture.
Oh, no, absolutely. I got to see this. Well, I've already sent you a Facebook friend request, so I want to keep in contact so you can see the things we're doing here. But I got to work on a bumper sticker and a patch. We need like an Action Radio patch, Action Radio Citizen Legislature, with like a big microphone, you know, a hand holding a microphone or something like that. Donnie, we got to talk.
Absolutely.
I get Gatlin on this too, but yeah, we need to do some
marketing
here.
He's a graphic designer.
Yeah. Oh, Donnie is or Gatlin?
Yes.
Or both of you are?
Graphic designer, yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, I'll be talking to him. Yeah, absolutely. Amongst everything else we're doing, like I said, I've been working on an Australian Bill of Rights, which is going to probably make international news here within the next month. And so things we're doing in Action Radio are staggering. That's my thing, you know, is the whole legislative angle, the whole, creating a document that increases, you know, freedom for millions of people, you know, and then hopefully that'll be a model for, you know, we could actually use some of the things we're putting in that in our own Bill of Rights. Because a lot of it's updated for modern technology, for COVID, for different things that are going on. So it's very interesting. Are there any restrictions on you guys legally? Is anybody trying to limit shooting or say that you're bad people or, you know, try and, you know, not televise or not cover or, you know, move ranges or, you know, what kind of opposition are you finding?
I think
in my state, I live in Alabama.
Now, yeah, Florida, the gunshine state. I think our thing that's holding us back right now, as far as going to farther matches, is the fuel price. I'm starting to notice that at matches. I think people are kind of cutting back because by the time they pay match fees, ammo, and hotel, that's pretty pricey. Now you throw in the cost of gas. I mean, people are working around it. They're trying to, you know, carpool and buddy up in rooms and stuff. But as far as politically in the competition world, I don't think there's anything holding us back.
Okay, good.
You know, I think we have some pretty good representatives that speak on our behalf, you know, at USPSA headquarters, and that promote it, promote the sport of shooting, that's kind of helping us out. So,
How about, because I know oil's been restricted, are like the components, you know, the gunpowder components, the primer components, the brass itself, and the lead, you know, are you being outregulated with any of that at all? I'm just curious.
Taryn can speak on behalf of that. I know Team Chappie is it. I am actually one of the few firearm importers in the States, and I'm actually, it's more to come on that, but I'm working on a big import contract coming in hopefully in June. So
yeah,
we're in the South would be, yeah, hopefully a lot of people in the South still working on it. Chappie Tactical is working on importing about 1.3 million 9mm rounds, some 5.56 rounds, and some primers. So this is going to be our first test bed with a company we're working with overseas. And hopefully after that, they'll start coming in and start getting them shipping containers or two every month. So,
wow.
So we're beating, you know, we're fighting that fight, you know, as far as the restrictions, you know, as far as how manufacturing kind of slowed here, raw components and stuff. So, hey, we like what people have been doing the test of time, you know, just kind of barter and trading. We're doing what we have to do, import stuff here. So we're going to keep the sport going. That's the goal of Chappie Tactical.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and we've done a series of shows, the truckers that are in D.C. I did some shows specifically designed for the truckers to be able to use information in Washington. We talked about this a week ago Monday, one of my favorite shows, Dr. Roger Roots was on. We're talking about how the land in the western states that the feds have claimed is actually state land. And if they opened up that state land, they could drill for oil. We talked about carbon dioxide being a good thing. It actually helps the environment, helps plants. You know, we talked about how the earth actually makes oil. You know, there's no artificial shortage. It's an artificial shortage, but it's not a real shortage because, you know, hydrogen and carbon combine under heat and pressure in the mantle form hydrocarbons, and those hydrocarbons, you know, form more complex chains that becomes eventually oil. You know, so the things that we're facing now, these prices, this gas, it's all government. It's a government-induced energy shortage. There's no reason for it at all. And so the problems that we're all facing here, you know, I don't know if we want to get the shooting world together with the truckers, together with a bunch of other folks, but quite frankly, there's no reason for what we're experiencing because the earth has plenty of oil. Carbon dioxide is a good thing. And, the carbon dioxide rates in the world increase after the temperature warms up, not before. They don't cause it. You know, and the fact that we've got plenty of land that the feds have taken over that they have no right to. And so there are solutions out there. There are things that we can do, but I don't know, like I say, how much you guys want to, you know, get into that, but it'd be nice to have more and more groups sort of saying, hey, you know, what's going on here? It doesn't have to happen. You know, it's just, I don't know. That's just my thing.
Yeah.
But that's the problem with the gas prices. There's no reason for high gas prices. There's no reason you folks are restricted from going to these things.
Yeah. And
bugs me.
Like I said, with the gas prices, I've known there's people that are, they're cutting back, like I said, on their training, on their shooting, and on their traveling, just because that's really, you know, hitting their wallet right now, and it's terrible. I mean, but like I said, people are trying to work things, you know, let's say, hey, you know, carpooling the matches, and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
well,
getting Airbnb
you know.
Together and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, we have a bill here at Action Radio that would create tax credits and tax deductions for quality firearms and ammunition. So we got a way to help you guys. If you want to take that on.
We'd love it.
You know, that's, you know, I did that especially, you know, I put it in liberal language too, which is kind of cool, talking about how, you know, access to quality firearms and ammunition, you know, would be a good thing. We actually have tax credits, tax You know, so there's no reason why guns and ammunition should not be tax deductible, considering it's a constitutional right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
There's something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, we've certainly covered our hour. Actually, we've gone beyond it. So, Taryn, thanks for sticking around. So, do you guys, is there anything else you particularly want to cover? Because I'm just going to go into my normal issues and things. I don't want to, you know, bug you guys with too much of that. But, yeah.
I'm just going to kind of say, Taryn, is there any way people can find you on social media or any plugs for, like, how somebody wants to get in the Steel Challenge shooting or USPSA? Where can they find this information?
Yeah, so if you want to find me on social media, my Instagram handle is TEEREXPEWS for T-Rex Pews. And if you'll send me a follow, I will follow you back. And if you want to get involved with the sport, Steel Challenge website is scsa.org. And then you also have uspsa.org. And that are the two league websites you can log on to and learn more.
Wow. Sounds good. Thanks for coming on the show, both of you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yes, sir.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Like I say, you're always welcome anytime. You know, if you want to join Chappie in one of his reports, you know, you want to call in for a bit, just feel free to join us. And Chappie, I want more information on what you're doing, you know, in terms of ammunition and the sporting stuff and all your great creations that you're doing and holsters and everything else, you know, building AR-15s, all that kind of stuff. You should feel free to announce that every time you're on, because that's real important information.
Yeah.
You know, helps you, helps me, helps Action Radio. And I want a patch and a bumper sticker out of Gatlin.
Oh, we'll get it. I just also like to throw in a plug for our range. 2 weeks ago, we had our very first USPSA match at Scabby River Gun Club, and it was an absolute amazing event. We were sold out. Our match was sold out. It flowed really well. Everybody had a great time, and our next match is April 2nd. At Escambia River Gun Club. You can find our match on practicescore.com. Just look up Escambia River Practical Shooters, and the match will pop up. We still have a few slots left for April. T-Rex will be there shooting. Gatlin will be there shooting. I'll have some ammo samples if anybody would like to try them out to see how the ammo runs in their particular firearm. You can also find me on Instagram at Chappie Tactical and also on Facebook facebook.com/ChappieTactical. So, and then hopefully what we're looking at, we're talking about World Fair. We might try to see if we can do a call-in with Gatlin and Taryn while they're there in Talladega just to kind of talk about the vibe of what's going on at Worlds and how the environment is and what's going on. Maybe they can ask some other shooters what their game plan is and what did they do to get ready for that situation? What was the build up to it? So that's something we might look into.
Oh yeah. I'd love to have them both come together. I mean, it'd be kind of fun to compare strategies because they approach this differently. And just those differences, I think would be very interesting to take a look at.
So, how's that sound, Taryn?
Yeah and no. It just depends on the training schedules.
Yeah,
I know Gatlin tends to shoot a lot more guns than I do, so he's probably shooting all day. I don't know if that time frame he'd be able to accommodate that with him shooting. And then I'm also shooting, so we'll have to see how it shakes out when we get up there. I've never been to Worlds, so this is my first rodeo with it. If it's able to be done, for sure, or we can, you know, do a recap with you for sure after that. That won't be a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe we can do a recap show the week after. I'm shooting Worlds, but I'm shooting a few days before these big hitters are shooting, so I'll be there for a day. So. But,
that's good.
Yeah, that's all I have, Greg. And, Taryn, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you giving us your insight and your background about shooting. And, again, thank you for coming on. And good luck.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chappie. Thank you. I know Gatlin's going to beat me, but I'm going to try my best.
Well, give him a weak dinosaur name. Call him, if you're T-Rex, we should make him what? What's a friendly little dinosaur? Brontosaurus?
Yeah.
I don't know. Those are like the giraffes of the dinosaurs. I don't know. Got to think of something cool for him.
Does he have a nickname?
Maybe he could be like the big the shark.
Yeah, we'll call him
Shark.
the mustache or anything. But we always joke with Gatlin, too, because he's so fast. We're like, hey, man, hope nobody Nancy or Tanya Harding's you. Because, you know, it's sort of like.
Well, he probably would like my chair. Let's call him Lightning. Yeah, we'll call him Lightning Gatlin.
Yeah.
Or Gatlin Lightning. Yeah, we'll work on it. All right. All right, you two, get out of here. We'll talk to you later. Have a wonderful weekend. Chappie will do it again Friday. And Taryn, good luck in your next competition.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. Y'all have a good morning. All right, bye-bye.
Well, thank you. You have a good morning, too. So continuing on with our Mulligan show, we're obviously after 9 o'clock right now for those who are listening live. But if you get in podcast, no big deal. So let me play a couple things, and I'll be right back.
This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Well, that's kind of weird. I'm hearing some fuzzy stuff in that recording. I might I'll have to check it in the podcast and see how it sounds. I'm on my cell phone today because everything got screwed up. I slept past the beginning of the show. Started late. Fortunately, Shirley was right there. So the beginning of the show probably sounds a little crazy. We've only got about 16 minutes left here. And so I want to raise another issue that is going to be bigger and bigger as the nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson, the black woman, you know, goes up to a confirmation hearing. And of course, you know, the fact that Brandon said, well, I want to have a black woman on the Supreme Court, and then picked a black woman to be on the Supreme Court, you know, now she's the black woman, okay, which is stupid, because I want people to be there, you know, for reasons of you know, great judicial temperament, learned decisions and opinions. You know, I want the people to actually follow the Constitution. I don't give a damn what they look like. To me, that's irrelevant. We've talked about this before, too. But here's what's concerning, though. This is from Spencer Brown, and this is March 17th. So yesterday, SCOTUS nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson's record on sex offenders raises concerns in the Senate. I saw a little bit of this last night on the news. Senator Josh Hawley is raising this question. This is a big deal. So in other words, do you get over your political correctness, you know, and actually question the black woman as if she were just a nominee for the Supreme Court, as opposed to the black woman nominee for the Supreme Court, and not worry about the charges of racism for questioning somebody, and do your damn job, senators, and do your damn job and find out who this person is, and don't put her on the Supreme Court just because she's the black woman. You know, I don't want to see this kind of privilege for any group for any reason. Anyway, the article says Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's judicial record is facing increasing scrutiny as the Senate confirmation hearings for President Brandon to replace a retiring justice Stephen Breyer draws closer. And one subject of the cases she's handled has Senator Josh Hawley, he's a Republican from Missouri, demanding answers. This is going to be, see, Josh Hawley, he doesn't worry about political correctness. He'll ask the questions, and he'll hopefully lead his other, you know, gelding senators into asking questions too. It says, in a thread posted on Wednesday evening, Hawley pointed out that during his review of Judge Jackson's past decisions, speeches, and writings, he, quote, noticed an alarming pattern when it comes to Judge Jackson's treatment of sex offenders, especially those preying on children. According to Hawley's review, Judge Jackson has a pattern of letting child porn offenders off the hook for their appalling crimes, both as a judge and as a policymaker. And that pattern is one for which she has been advocating since law school. As Holly points out before listing several examples, Judge Jackson's position, quote, goes beyond soft on crime and shows a record that endangers our children. One example Holly found in his review showed Judge Jackson fretting about convicted sex offenders being forced to register and suggesting such practices are driven by a climate of fear, hatred, and revenge. Okay? And this Judge Holly says as far back as her time in law school, this is a tweet from Judge Holly, from 13 minutes left. Josh Hawley, senator from Missouri, said as far back as her time in law school, Judge Jackson has questioned making convicts register as sex offenders, saying it leads to stigmatization and ostracism. Well, of course it does. That's what it's supposed to do. That's why you register as a sex offender. Anyway, he says she's suggesting public policy is driven by a climate of fear, hatred, and revenge against sex offenders. Well, I don't think these are warm and snuggly people you want to get close to. They're sex offenders, okay? I mean, that's the whole point. Anyway, the article says, Holly found that Judge Jackson has also questioned sending dangerous sex offenders to civil commitment. And as a member of the U.S. Sentencing Commission, Judge Jackson advocated for drastic change in how the law treats sex offenders by eliminating the existing mandatory minimum sentences for child porn. In addition, it appears Judge Jackson has something of an obsession with understanding people who possess child porn, but aren't pedophiles or less serious pedophiles. Anyway, another Josh Hawley tweet, Judge Jackson has said that some people who possess child porn are in this for either the collections or the people who are loners and find status in their participation in the community. You know, what community would that be? The community of child exploiters? Anyway, there's something really wrong here. There's something really, really wrong and really dangerous. He's got another quote, tweet here. Judge Jackson has opined there may be a type of, quote, less serious child pornography offender whose motivation is not sexual, but is the challenge, or to use the technology, a less serious child porn offender. There are more tweets, more stuff, more articles. Well, let me just finish the article here, and then I'll tell you what I think. It says Judge Jackson seems to be seeking an exception to existing policy used to punish those who possess child porn, but who she thinks only possess it because they're in this for the community, who are motivated by the challenge or to use the technology, or are non-pedophiles who obtain child pornography. Yeah. And then she says, big yikes. Even worse, Holly reports that the Sentencing Commission has refused to turn over all of Judge Jackson's records from her time there. In light of what we have learned, this stonewalling must end. Holly added in his demand for access to all relevant records. Well, now, isn't that interesting? The Sentencing Commission doesn't want to give over her records. I mean, that's public record. Okay, what she did in the Sentencing Commission is public record. All that stuff has to come out. Anyway, last couple of paragraphs. The viewpoints expressed by Judge Jackson while on the U.S. Sentencing Commission were apparently put into action once Brandon's nominee became a federal judge, according to Holly's review. And why is only he the one doing this? You know, this is really interesting. He's also one that talked about the decline of masculinity, something we talked about earlier in the show. Anyway, he says, in every single child porn case for which we can find records, Judge Jackson deviated from the federal sentencing guidelines in favor of child porn offenders. Well, this should be enough to keep her off the court right there. I don't want this person on the Supreme Court, okay? I don't care if you're a black woman, white guy, you know, short Asian dude, you know, or tall Hispanic woman. None of that stuff matters. What matters is that she's got a problem over the fact that she's way too lenient on sex offenders. Okay, so what else is she going to be leaning on the court? Do you really want someone that has this kind of a treatment of sex offenders, you know, basically, quote, interpreting the Constitution, something that they really aren't allowed to do, something we've been over? Last paragraph, it says, among the sentencing decisions Holly reviewed, there were multiple examples of Judge Jackson handing down lesser punishments than what is called for in the federal sentencing guidelines. She's not even following the sentencing guidelines. How the hell is she going to follow the Constitution? This is the problem. Anyway, this is just to raise even more questions about what Judge Jackson is thinking. And so this, there's more. This is a big article. All right, anyway, I'll let you read that. I don't want to cover this anymore right now. You can go to Town Hall. You can go to Spencer Brown, March 17th, yesterday. The title of the article is SCOTUS nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson's record on sex offenders raises concerns in the Senate. All right, so I'm kind of at a battle myself. I've got 8 minutes left in the show, and I've only got so much battery power on my phone left. So this is going to be kind of interesting. All right, so here's what I think is happening. there is a group that is trying to normalize pedophilia. There's a group in society, there's NAMBLA, the National Man-Boy Love Association, one of the most disgusting and offensive and repulsive groups that, that ever was formed. You know, the, this idea of sexualizing our children in schools, of having, you know, the whole gender identity questioning. Are you really a boy? Are you really a girl? Would you like to switch over? Would you like to see what it's like on the other side? You know, I mean, this kind of mentality in the schools and the fact that, you know, we have the bill in Florida. I don't know if it became law or not, but there's either a bill or a law in Florida that says that you can't teach this stuff to kids. You can't expose, you know, five-year-olds to pornography, gender identity, to sexual education at the ridiculously young age, especially without the parents knowing about it. So this is a big problem. So, you know, it really, it seems like all our problems come back to Democrats, all our problems come back to Marxists, all our problems come back to, at some way you can trace it directly to the schools, the government schools. And so this, you know, it just seems to me that this is where everything seems to be coming from. And so that's the problem. That's the situation we're in right now. And I don't know what, to do about it other than just get rid of the government schools. I got some more stuff here. I've only got 7 minutes left. I don't have a caller right now. So, you know, I probably, let me see if there's any one other issue. Well, let's cover this one. This actually might be interesting to finish up the week on. And this is Washington Times. And it's from, let me see if I can find it when it's from. They call themselves America's Newspaper. That's kind of interesting. But again, this is on Judge Jackson. Dark money groups cast deep shadows over Supreme Court confirmation battles. Dark money. This is from Alec Swoyer, S-W-O-Y-E-R, Washington Times, Thursday, March 10th. So last week. This I find interesting, too, that the amount of money that is spent on who are nominees for the Supreme Court, that it's a battle. It's an ideological battle. The liberals want liberal judges. The conservatives want conservative judges. And the problem is, if you're following the Constitution, it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't make any damn difference. That's what I find so horrendous about this. Anyway, the article says, dark money advocacy groups have become the boogeyman of Supreme Court confirmation battles in recent years, with lawmakers in both political parties trying to ding the presidential nominees by linking them to political activism. Republican senators last year quizzed Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, so it's Judge Jackson, about demand justice during her confirmation hearing for the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. Oh, she is on the fast track. And they are preparing to link her to the liberal group again during her Supreme Court confirmation hearings this month. Oh, this is going to be interesting. Demand justice. I'm really curious. Of course, I'll look that up myself as I do my own review of her for the Supreme Court for this consideration. So you bet I'm going to be watching the confirmation hearings very, very closely. In fact, I found the Kavanaugh hearings absolutely fascinating, not for what everybody reported on, but for that seven-minute section with Senator Lindsey Graham, who actually was brilliant, who talked about the limits of the Supreme Court. What are the limits to the laws they can create? And of course, there are no limits, because there are no limits on the Supreme Court because of Marbury versus Madison, because of judicial review, because of the fact that they can do whatever they please because they can, quote, interpret the Constitution. All right. So let me just see a little bit more of this article here. So it's a matter of record that this nominee, that's Judge Jackson, was the anointed favorite of these fringe groups. At this time last year, they were already spending dark money to raise her profile. Dark money, not referring to her being black. Don't get crazy here, folks, okay? But this is dark money is any mystery money. It's any money. It's like a black budget. In other words, money that's off the books. This is secret. So this is how they characterize it in Washington. Anyway, so it says, so I intend to explore why groups that are waging political war against the court as an institution decided Judge Jackson was their special favorite. And that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who actually the one thing he's good on is judges and Supreme Court justices. It's probably the only thing he's good on, keeping Merrick Garland, you know, the terrorist that's now running the Department of Justice as Attorney General, keeping him off the Supreme Court was a wonderful thing. The article says dark money refers to cash from undisclosed donors and unknown sources that are special interest groups used to fund efforts to influence voters. So, yeah, these are lobbyists without accountability. Demand Justice, a group formed by former Hillary Clinton spokesman Brian Fallon, spent six figures on advertisements during Judge Jackson's circuit court confirmation. That's a lot of money for a circuit court judge. Okay. Anyway, as he pledged to spend $1 million to support her nomination the day insurrectionist Brandon announced her as his nominee to replace retiring Justice Stephen Breyer. Okay, insurrectionist Brandon is my words, all right, just so you don't get confused here. All right. I said, oh, click to read more. Yes, let me do that. Let me click to read more. Where's the rest of the article? Here we go. Demand Justice sponsored a mobile billboard in Washington saying, Breyer, retire. It's time for a black woman Supreme Court justice. There's no time to waste. Yeah, they're always in a rush. Always in a rush. Always like, you know, justice delayed is justice denied, which is true. But, of course, it depends on what your version of what justice is. Justice is not putting a leftist, Marxist, black woman who loves, you know, pedophiles and sex offenders on the Supreme Court. That's not a good thing. Okay, so I'm going to oppose her with everything I can. Just because of what we're getting here. The article says conservatives say the pressure campaign worked. Justice Breyer announced he would leave after the Supreme Court closes out its term at the end of June. Yeah, I've seen him interviewed. He's a pretty coherent guy. Now he's a liberal, you know, granted that. But I think he's if you can call a reasonable liberal, you know, he's not going to vote for what I want to vote for, the way the decisions are going to go, because I actually follow the Constitution to the letter. You know, and I don't believe in judicial review. I think that's a power they usurp that they'd have no right to. But on the, I think that Breyer's, you know, a decent guy, you know, who believes in what he's saying. He is consistent. His convictions are pretty good as far as they go in terms of honor and decency and a respectable person. I just disagree with the votes he takes. But this judge, the whole pedophile thing, the lesser sentences, not following the sentencing guidelines, all the other stuff that I'm learning about. No, this is a big, big problem. All right. So back to Demand Justice. Brian Fallon's organization. The organization has also supported the idea of adding more justices to the high court, known as court packing. That goes back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, to counter the 6-3 conservative majority. Yeah, they always want to do that. Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee last year tried to get Judge Jackson to weigh in on Demand Justice's call for adding justices and its advocacy for her circuit court nomination. She says, I have no control over what outside groups say. She said, there we go. My scroller's not working this morning either. It's like nothing's working this morning. I'm really trying. Let me see. There we go. She said at the time, creating concerns, this is back to the article, and raising the stakes by linking nominees to outside groups in a game both parties play. Democrat senators chided President Trump's high court nominees who were supported by conservative groups, including the Judicial Crisis Network. Well, I don't think any of these people should be supported by outside groups. That's not the purpose of the Supreme Court. So they're getting it wrong. Looks like I got a minute left here, so I'm going to have to sum up here in a bit. It says, here's a quote. It says, we have anonymous funders running through something called the Judicial Crisis Network, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Rhode Island Democrat, said. Okay, he said the group spent $7 million to attack Merrick Garland when President Obama nominated him to the high court and $10 million to boost Justice Neil Gorsuch, Trump's first nominee to the Supreme Court. Well, I'm going to condemn the Republicans as much as the Democrats. You shouldn't be spending millions of dollars. The Supreme Court's not a place for PR campaigns. There's something really wrong here, and I think they've got – this is a problem. But I'll tell you what, in the 30 seconds I have left, I'm going to be taking a really close look at Judge Jackson. And it looks to me, just based on what I've read so far and what I've heard, she has no business on the Supreme Court. And first of all, she has no business because nobody should have been appointed under the criteria of we need a black woman on the court. That is not how this country runs. That is blatantly racist. And it's just and this from a traitorous, you know, usurper who stole the White House, it makes sense. It makes sense of what the Democrats are doing. It's all about power. It's not about the Constitution. It's not about justice or you know, mom apple pie the American way. It's not about anything like that. It's about raw power, and any way they choose to get it, the ends justify the means. That's what it is. I'll talk to you Monday. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And I'll have a little meeting with Representative Matt Gaetz at his barbecue tomorrow in Fort Walton Beach at the new campaign headquarters. That's 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time. And I'll have a report for you Monday exactly what happened. And I'll talk to you Monday, 6 in the morning, a.m. Central Time. And have a good weekend. Talk to you then.